Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM from 11 to 1. I'm thinking about mind the gap. This is Home Run. I just said bananas, I swear. I didn't drink.
Because I was wondering, where's the 11 to 1 coming from?
I know, right?
Yeah.
So from 4 to 7 here on Home Run, your drive time show from Monday to Friday with your favorite duo, which has a way of becoming a trio from 6 to 7.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
We acknowledge, David. We are determined.
Sound like the old protocol observed, guys.
Well, reading these AU documents, I'm going to surprise you. Yeah. And I, we haven't started using language like we recognize, we agree.
We recognize your presence.
We acknowledge. You know, the sentences always start like that.
Yeah.
It's not about, we take what you have and then we use it. No,
yeah.
We just acknowledge, agree, and recognize.
So, African Union, right? So, that's what's going to be our discussion for today. And that's coming from our, you know, our pile of documents coming out of the African Union, from the first annual meetings of this year. And, their declaration and resolutions and decisions document. Now, today's discussion was spearheaded in terms of presentation, or at least because of the way that the man is acknowledged pretty much all throughout the document, including on more information on the same subject of reformations that the African Union would like to, the reformations that the Union is, the Union has underway.
Mm.
Yeah. And William Ruto is actually, you know, well, it's his time to shine on this one. It's his time to shine. Now, reforming the African Union. Okay. Now, on today's reformation, I know, I'm going to take this a little wider in terms of the African Union. And we know that before it became the African Union, it was the Organization of African Unity. So there's some changes that have taken place. And, of course, you know, fast forward to, you know, 2002, moving in this direction to where we are right now. We said that there are a lot of agencies that that basically split out in the very same way that you have the United Nations has the World Food Programme, UNICEF, UNESCO, and all that. The African Union is obviously split in a lot of, agencies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to, I'm going to deviate, in due course of today's show into, just some of the agencies that the African Union has. But, this reformation as it relates to this day's, to today's Home Run discussion is a little specific as to what they were looking at in terms of the priorities in terms of reforming the African Union. Now, the priorities that I found, at least the ones that are listed by the African Union here, is various studies and analysis of the African Union has identified that the African Union faced several major challenges, and some of those challenges includes the African Union is highly fragmented with too many focus areas. Shocker.
No, I actually disagree with that, with focus areas.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at 2063, it's a 24-page document.
Yeah.
It's a document that is concise. It is, for example, if you compare it, if you compare it for a 54 member nation entity, the OA, the AU, this document is so streamlined, Helmut. You literally can't go wrong. It's not, for example, like the it's not, okay. Let me also just stand on protocol here.
Where is this coming from?
Because I just want to say, I don't want to call the national plan, our national development plan as a confusing document, because that is just as clear a document as it can get. I'm talking about the full page, that the one with the more than 100 pages version, not the summarized document, the full NDP policy document. That is clear, but I mean, more than 100 pages, ne?
Yeah.
You, in many cases, some readers, you're already intimidating them specifically. And I'm talking about even if you are an avid reader of fictional work, if you have to see a 100 page document, which is associated to your everyday life, you'd go like, nah, man. But, okay, that's why you've got the home run. We do that. We will do that for you. We will read it for you.
Don't worry, we'll be
here. We will read it for you. That's what we do. And you compared, for example, that document, Nehemiah, to this Agenda 2063. Agenda 2063, straightforward, 24 pages, wonderful, concise, easy sentences to get through. NDB6 has got a lot of tables, lovely design, way better design than this document of 2015, which is Agenda 2063. And if you guys ever had the opportunity of reading the Harambe Prosperity Plan 2, the way that document was also laid out, I'm just talking about layout, ne?
Yeah.
Was also slightly intimidating for anyone. If you're not a regular reader of such documents or policy documents and the likes, it would have been a little bit of a confusing thing because it's worse than the textbooks we had at universities. You remember that it has these little summarized blocks here and a small block there, but then you have the main body of the text flowing here in the middle of the page.
Yeah.
Now, you don't know, should I read that summary block or should I read the main page itself?
Usually I just go for the main page because the summary block have more like just the emphasis of what's already going on in the main page. But before we continue, commercial break. It's a short break, baby.
ShopRite's birthday is in the major league with major low prices. Get 500 grams champion Onyama Yummy Poloni Roll, only $26.99. 10 kg Bokomo Fat Cook Wheat Flour for $139.99. And 200 grams Protex Bath Soap, all variants, just $15.99 each. Valid until 9 August 2026. Get major savings with ShopRite's major league birthday. Plus, pick a box for a chance to win your share of over $500,000 and weekly gift cards. Buy any three participating products. WhatsApp the code on your till slip and pick a box to see if you're a winner. Only at ShopRite.
Welcome back. 15 minutes into the hour of four. So we still have a lot of time ahead of us. And believe me, with a lot of information, because if you're talking about the discussions around the reformation of an organization that's been running since the 1960s, that's one long menu.
Yeah. It is a long menu, Helmut. I almost said David. Sorry, man. Helmut. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I don't know.
Yeah, Francina keeps calling me Dwight. And
I don't know what's going on here. I really don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe my brain needs a software update. But yeah, so... Okay. Besides the length of policy documents, there's an important thing that springs up from this reform discussion. Now, I'm always going to throw this in, Helmut, because this has been our bane as Africa.
Yeah.
But it has also been a reason why I could see why Namibia has got this. We've got this. Have you ever noticed, Ahmed? We've got a, I went to one particular ministerial event yesterday, once again, but I observed something, which is something that the AU guys, when they had the 2024 AU MSME AFCFTA thing. Remember when I went there to the country club when that engagement took place in 2024? And then I recorded it for us and I came back and we had a discussion about what some of the core messages were here. And one of the speakers at that event said, Namibia is one of the first countries he's been to on the continent that sings the AU anthem after its national anthem.
Yeah.
And once again, when, we go through this official procession thing, at ministerial events in Namibia, I stood there thinking to myself, are we really the only country on the continent that does this action, that sings the AU anthem right after our national anthem? That's at the start, if you guys didn't know. And when you end whatever event it was, whether it's even a donation event or handover event or launch event, like the thing I went to yesterday, then it's AU and then your national anthem. You end it like that. You come in with your national anthem and you end exit out of the event with your national anthem. So, but the AU anthem is technically always secondary to your national, because you've got your sovereign identity.
Yeah.
So I stood there thinking to myself, just recalling that guy's words, because it was a guy from the AFCFTA secretariat. And I stood there thinking, are we really the only African continent that actually does this, that's proud to be African? But then I also thought about how you don't see Namibia technically championing on, basically like championing greatly this AFCFTA, AU discussion in a Namibian context, like at every level.
Mm-hmm.
We did it last year. We did it partially in the year before, 2024, specifically when we still had Minister of Industrialization and Trade, with Minister Lucia Ibumbu being the minister, where she did the massive sort of like promotional activities, flying to Ghana, promoting Namibia and Ghana,
mm-hmm.
Helping to promote the AFCFTA discussion, and specifically trying to connect Namibia to many of these markets. But now, after we've got now a new administration going, that's now a year and a half now, and I sit there thinking to myself, so we've, as Namibia, we've actually cooled down in terms of recent developments on the AFCFTA discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see this. And when we obviously decided, Helmut, late after yesterday's show on today's topic, and, reading through this decisions, declarations, and resolutions document again, where this particular document, this part is contained on the reform of the AU,
mm-hmm.
you read there that our biggest bane is for AU is self-sustainability. Financial self-sustainability. And there's a funny thing at the end, but I'll let you finish your sentence now. There's a funny thing at the end in terms of remember at the end of the document, there's that $950,000 that's mentioned.
Yeah.
Released from private sector. Now I said the thing is to myself, the AU has a private sector? Is it the private sector in the individual economies? Or is it the private sector, or is it a private sector fund, a support fund, or a fund that plays a particular role? Because the money is used to finance the formulation of the various task forces for the various regional zones of the continent.
Yeah.
And I still sit there going like, what private sector are they talking about? Is there a private sector office in the AU building itself? What is this? But still, yeah, what?
Like a private sector representation within the AU.
Yeah.
Okay, that would be interesting. Just like the national anthem, the national anthem and the African anthem point you made earlier. I've watched a lot of stakeholder engagements coming out of outside, being held outside Namibia. Especially South Africa. And, I think if Rwanda pops up from time to time, in Kenya, I went through one that took place in Egypt a few weeks ago. But I never really follow these events from the beginning to see whether they do sing whether or not they sing the African anthem or they just sing their own anthem. And that's primarily because, I'm more interested in the content. So I just like to skip all the protocol observed, because the first 10, 15 minutes to 20 minutes is just acknowledging and welcoming and all this, and while the bathrooms are that way, the exit. So, well, I'm not in the building, so I'm not listening to that.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah. So now the thing is, you nailed the I mean, you hit the nail on the head with the, with the finance, because the African Union themselves, they listed four challenges that is basically a priority in this whole reformation discussion. And the first one is the AU is the first one says the AU is highly fragmented with too many focus areas that I read earlier. And the second one is the AU's complicated structure and limited management capacity leads to insufficient working methods, poor decision making, and a lack of accountability. That's a regulation issue.
That's also a governance issue.
Exactly.
It's actually the broader term, governance and
it's
accountability.
It's just the governance issue. Because if you're talking about accountability, the question that comes up is...
do you own up to your mistakes?
Do you have measures in place?
Do you own up to your decisions?
Yeah.
Africa is not known for practicing feng shui. Let's just also be honest, Africans. The Chinese already own feng shui. You can't be playing a version of Africa of feng shui in Africa. We can't.
It actually gets more depressing because, like you just pointed out, they could have just summarized this whole thing, or into one word: governance.
Yes.
Yeah, because the third one, the third point says the AU needs to The AU is neither financially independent nor self-sustaining, relying instead on partner funding for much of its financing. That's not your organization.
So it now, actually, Helmut, remember when you and I, and into this year, where we've been trying to nail the self-financing dimension of the AU?
Yeah.
Where we've been trying to say, what is the financial viability or feasibility of this continental organization?
Yeah.
This document, dear listeners, came out in February.
Yeah.
On Valentine's Day, I think.
Yeah, that's when they...
No. It came out after.
Yeah, they had the event on Valentine's Day.
Yeah. It began on Valentine's Day, just so that you guys know. For you, those who are loving
it. Event organizer got dumped shortly before Valentine's Day. It's like, you know what? I'm going to ruin it for everyone.
Who got dumped?
The event organizer. It's like, you know what? If I'm not enjoying Valentine's Day, no one is. So.
What are you talking about, Helmut? Ethiopia?
The Valentine's Day with the Tigray region didn't go well, so they decided.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. But the Tigray is supposed to know that they are technically already, in a situation. But anyway, I almost used a different word. I didn't want to expose myself that heavy. So when we've got to look at that sentence that you just read now.
The financing.
The finances.
Yeah.
We've been trying to nail for the past year and a half since you and I began back in 2024 here on the home run. Where does the money come from the AU? How does the AU achieve its operationality in terms of the money that's needed?
Mm-hmm.
And right there, just that sentence in that part, and it's a 3-page chapter of that overall 213-page document of decisions, declarations, and resolutions by the AU heads of state commission. Just that 3.5 pages, almost 4 pages. In that specific chapter, we get to an establishment of the fact, the exact fact, the up-to-date fact of where the AU gets its money. Which is technically, in many cases, how Namibia is assisted by development partners also.
Yeah.
There's two big ones, technically. Two massively big ones. Sometimes I sit there wondering, how does that economy of 80 million people, Helmut, Germany, have so much money in development funding? Not even USAID comes close to what Germany does. Helmut, there's a GIZ in almost every African country.
Yeah.
There's a GIZ in AU. Can you guys believe this? I thought it was pervasive.
It was only for Namibia? Oh, no. It's on AU level. It's a Namibian level. It's an actually almost, if not every individual African level.
Country.
It's on SADC level.
It's on, yeah. I don't know. Did I use that audio? There was an interview I recorded there. The one about, was it about sustainable farming? There's a Zimbabwe GIZ. There's a South Africa GIZ. You guys know this?
I'm pretty sure, someone out there knows a guy who knows a guy that works for an NGO that works or has, at some point worked with GIZ.
Yeah.
So, I started obviously started seeing this from a Namibian perspective, in terms of the development partners that we work with. And then I started reading up on SADC's development programs, GIZ, all of it, African Union development programs, GIZ, all of it. I was like, okay, just how much money do these guys have?
Yeah, every year, Hamoud. And then there's the EU financing.
Yeah.
Because you get GIZ, German Development Agency, then you get EU finance, EU development financing.
Yeah.
And this is a country of 80 million. This is not even like the US economy that has 300 million people. No. Germany just has 80 million people alone. But worrying about that specific, those specifics, sort of like, you know, deviating from the main point, because the main point still stands. They mention here, I think it's just below or above that line, Helmut, that you just read, where they cite Agenda 2063. But I'm still on like the first page, you know, on chapter number 6 under the assembly announcements, you know, where it started from, the recalling. Yeah. But I'm at the point number 6, that other recalling, where it says, recalling Agenda 2063, which underscores Africa's self-reliance, financial independence, and institutional effectiveness. Feeding into your what you just read now, how technically it contradicts that picture. Because you have two different scenarios. We have a envisaged scenario and we have an actual reality on the ground. Yeah.
One last part I almost forgot. And that is one thing, well, you know, part of the reformation is to increase coordination between the African Union and the regional economic, the regional economic blocks.
Mm.
Yeah, the regional economic communities. Now, if you if you look at not just African Union, regional economic blocks or the intergovernmental organizations like your SADC, your ECOWAS, your COMESA. These separate intergovernmental and economic blocks. One thing that they have in common is, one of the several things, because they have quite a bunch of things that they have in common.
Yeah.
One thing that they have in common that I found fascinating, that ties, that comes from, these intergovernmental organizations and regional blocks, that ties into the overall African Union plan, is one of single currency. I think the initial idea of a unified single currency for the continent, for the African Union, if you trace it back to the 1960s, obviously, is that each bloc has to sort out its economic requirement that they must meet in order to come up with, to build an economy on a regional bloc level that is strong enough to sustain a single currency, and then just bring them together on an African Union level. Now, after reading that, I couldn't help but think, okay, take, for example, ECOWAS has their own, and things are not going very well there, because Guinea was like, yeah, no, well, on second thought, count me out on this whole, single currency. But it was just last month when they announced that they should be able to launch their regional bloc, the ECOWAS single currency, by 2027. They should be able to sort of iron out, all the things, by December, which is a very short time period if you think about implementing something as immense as a single currency for a bloc. We are in August. We are not even, October, November, December. And one of them is already going, yeah, about that. And that's because there's an elephant in the room they are not addressing.
Yeah.
Before the, I think before the ECOWAS guys should just go out there and start saying, you know what, we are announcing to the world that we are going to come up with our own, a single currency for the bloc. They should address the elephant in the room first. They have a bunch of African countries that still use the CFA franc.
Yes.
Which means their economy is heavily tied to the French economy.
Yes.
Now, they need to have a very difficult or hard conversation, whatever word they would like to use, with the French.
Mm.
That's the only way, because this is not the first time that the ECOWAS guys brought up the whole idea of a single currency. Every time they bring up the whole the discussion of a single currency, one thing that keeps getting in the way, the major thing that keeps getting in the way, is the Francophone countries that are part of the 12 intergovernmental blocs, who has their economy tied to the French economy.
Mm.
Again, we are not addressing that. We're just announcing to the world that we are going to start our own currency. Now, okay, which is a good thing. So you're telling me that you are so good at diplomacy and economic maneuverability to convince the French to separate their economy, which heavily relies on a lot of natural resources in these countries, that you can't pull that off in months.
Technically, you can, but technically you cannot.
Well,
okay, technically you can.
Yeah.
In reality, it's like you described it.
Yeah.
You cannot.
Yeah.
Reason being,
the French are not going to say, "Okay, you know what? You make a good point."
It's not just that, Helmut. The French will identify the good point.
Yeah.
But I will always repeat what I read back in last year in preparation for my Sunday morning take. Also in last year, is that Charles de Gaulle,
mm-hmm,
in the 1950s. After the European reconstruction through the Marshall Plan began, Charles de Gaulle came back, became president of France, né, as a former wartime general of France, and Charles de Gaulle put it to the former French African territories,
mm-hmm,
all these African countries, which includes the three misfits, Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso.
Yeah.
They issued, because at that stage, after 1945, the French realized we need to improve the French Republic. The French Republic, if you look at what the literature basically said or described to me, was the French realized, and these are the lawmakers, the politicians, and the other particular drafters of legislation in France, they realized after 1945 the version of the constitution, as at the time when the failed Austrian painter invaded France with the Blitzkrieg, the famous Blitzkrieg, you know, mobilized very fast military tactics, which also had a shock and awe aspect to it, which the Americans adopted during both the Gulf Wars with Saddam.
Mm-hmm.
It's very funny. They used, technically, in a span of like 40 years, same tactics that the German Wehrmacht used against the French.
Yeah.
Literally 50 years later, they used it against a slightly weaker, you know, opponent, which was Iraq.
Yeah.
And technically, France at that stage was not weak, because France actually had some hardware. But, you know, some internal things caused France's sort of like downfall during the fight.
Not the first time for France.
No. Helmut, there's actually a debunking going on the internet where the French are technically not quitters. They've participated in some of history's most bloodiest fights. The downside, which you can always see, which is like an equation, is that you always have to look at who's telling you what story.
Now, that's an excellent point you ended on there, because every time I look at Charles de Gaulle's plan of telling the former French colonies, more like basically the French plan, and we're talking about back in the 1950s here, gathering all the the representatives of all the French colonies and telling them, you know what, okay, well, we are just going to give you the independence to your countries, but under this and this and this and this condition. And to this day, I'm still looking at that as a PR. That's one giant PR. And I'm saying it's one giant PR because, they said, okay, you know what, you can be president, you can become your own political parties, but I want to maintain military presence in your country, and I want to literally run your economy, and that which is tied to your natural resources.
And your president is an honorary member of the French Parliament.
Yeah. No, you are not giving someone independence like that.
Your president in Africa, guys, is an honorary member of the French Parliament.
That's not you giving
by
someone
extension, events. Technically, that does qualify that the African territories are still part of France.
Yeah.
Now,
definitely.
In Agenda 2063, they mention here Mayotte, which is on the... Remember, it's the island that the Madagascan guy ran to last year, the president?
Yeah.
He had to flee to. Mayotte is just north of Madagascar, but Mayotte was also the island in 2020... No, back in last year, in 2025, that got devastated by a hurricane.
Yeah.
Same island. They had to respond as well. The concern, obviously, is that I now understand where the animosity with Morocco comes from, with Western Sahara, comes from this document, 2063 as well, Agenda 26. Because in preparation for today's show, guys, let me just be honest.
That explains that highway, you know, Donald Trump highway.
Yes, firstly, or secondly, I had to basically read the origin document for...
Agenda 2063?
Yeah, which is Agenda 26, for understanding... This. I almost used another Greek word. This.
What's going on, dude?
I don't know. But my internet, you know, made me angry today for some reason. And I realized it was most definitely a Windows update, oversharing a little bit. And I tried to accuse my internet service provider, you know, doing, you know, for probably playing witchcraft on just my internet and no one else's internet.
Just go French, man, or just go EU and switch operating system.
It's not so easy, Hamoud.
You know, just go Linux.
It doesn't say that your entertainment agrees with your switch as well. It also doesn't say that your antivirus agrees with your switch as well.
The thing about switching an OS is that you will have to switch a whole lot of things.
Yeah, specifically protection measures.
From antivirus. From your protection measures, the apps that you use, for opening and editing your documents, a lot of those things. I mean, they're open source alternatives, but
you try running, you know, Call of Duty on a Linux system. There is a support. There is probably a support function. But it's not always guaranteed.
The thing I've come to learn about open source softwares is a lot of them are so, you know, I think a lot of them are avoided. They are not mainstream because they require hands-on. A lot of hands-on because of the advantage is you can modify them in your own way. Like they're very fluid in a way that you can customize them.
Yeah.
But that's an advantage if you know what you're doing. But if you are not tech savvy and you're just, you know, you control your computer with a mouse, I hardly think that's gonna cut it.
Yep. But yeah. Okay. So, getting back on topic. Yeah. So when we've got to look at the Francophones, in Africa. They really try to be like a guiding light, specifically. You can see, for example, like with the Three Misfits, they really try to be, to project the independence that many of us, and I have to say I'm slightly a reserved Pan-Africanist. I'm not fully. I still believe in Namibia's goals. Namibia's goals still need to be achieved. I believe Namibia and SADC should be the shining light for, which technically puts me in a little bit of conflict with the AU agenda, because that technically means that SADC would basically be the best set example of how the AU achieves its goals. But SADC is already setting that record. Yeah. Besides for the Lobito thing, the explanation you provided yesterday I went like, what? For people who were putting up roadblocks illegally, you went and borrowed $600 million. What level of budget do you think it would take to just hire a little bit more police officers $600 million?
No, before you start hiring a little more police officers, you have to start with, this is a terrible example. What, Bro, Tinubu just did with his army, you know, just increase the salary. But homeboy knows something. But
look, yeah, and I told you what that answer is already.
Homeboy knows something.
He heard something.
He was this close to being well.
Was it confirmed?
No. I'm just saying, you know, that's not organic. Because 80%.
Because that's my suspicion.
80%
by so much. Nah.
Jeez.
It spells of something. Something was going on in the Nigerian army.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
It's kind of difficult not to be suspicious.
If you look at Namibia, teachers would get 7%, 5% goeders to the side.
Bro goes with
80% for a soldier. It's unheard of, guys. And it's not even like it's in rand or in Namibian dollars or USD.
Yeah.
It's in Naira. So what were those guys paid? But yeah, you were still saying them.
So, you have to start with the example that you provide in reference to the point that I made yesterday. That's the that's the Lobito Corridor group. I have that document somewhere here.
The one about Lobito.
I was just cracking my lungs, I was just cracking my lungs when I first saw that thing.
You know, that's a dangerous expression to use, Helmut, because it probably means that you were laughing so greatly, your lungs were literally cracking.
No, they were not literally cracking, otherwise I wouldn't be here speaking. Now,
yes.
With cracked lungs.
We know that, Helmut.
No, look, the thing is, back to the, let me just get that a little later. Let me go back to the African Union. Now, the financing part is not a secret.
Mm.
We have, at this point, that's a song for Africa. And in the very same way that you have the countries that forms a regional or an economic a regional bloc that has a few African countries that has still their economy tied to the French to France. Those countries have an elephant in the room that they are not addressing as to, okay, we can come up with a single currency. Excellent idea. But we have to iron out a few things that will bring us together. The first thing that I think was a brilliant idea is the economic advancement, the economic requirements they have to individually have to meet in order for them to be eligible of adopting a single currency. Because you don't just wake up and then start, deciding, okay, no, let's just come up with a single currency. But here's the thing, though. The thing is, that discussion, both on a different, separate regional blocks on the African continent and the African Union on itself, it keeps bringing me back to the point that you keep making.
Yeah.
Okay, which one of us is going to print the money?
Yep. Or on whose economy is the money going to be based? Because we see in Europe, let's take Europe. Let's take the best example closest to the AU.
Yeah.
The EU. Whose two economies are the bedrock for the EU?
Okay, I'm going German.
And France.
Yeah.
France claims that position primarily through the French Republic's dominance, which you and I have now satisfied extensively. Includes West African economies.
Now,
or French African speaking territories. These two economies lie at the bedrock of the EU's economy.
Yeah.
Yes, they also use the euro, but it was a common sacrifice between all the member nations to say, listen, we agree on this common currency to become a 27 member nation currency across the board, which allows for the movement of goods and services. From Greece to Denmark, they use the euro. No, I think Denmark still uses the krona, the Danish krona. Yeah, they still use the krona because Denmark is one of the few member nations before the UK withdrew with Brexit. But it was Denmark and the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Because Sweden, Norway, and Finland is the other. Yeah, Finland does use the euro. The Finnish don't use their currency anymore. So Denmark, Finland, Denmark, Sweden, Norway, and the UK were the only few guys that maintained their national currencies, meaning national identities. But these currencies were benchmarked against the krone, against the euro, and the euro benchmarked against them. So there was a mutually supportive system. Now, remember, Africa has got 54 member nations.
Mm-hmm.
In that equation, I can only see 2 to 3 economies functioning as bedrocks, or even 4. I'll stretch it even to number 4. Who am I talking about? South Africa, Angola, and SADC. Nigeria in West Africa. And Kenya in East Africa. Okay, let's throw in Algeria, number 5. And Egypt as well, number 6. For North Africa. But Egypt and Algeria, they are dominating economies already. They dominate. So these are Africa's big 6. So are we going to install those 6 economies at the bottom of Africa as the foundation economies? And then they agree on a common name? Or are we going to just have these regions functioning as such, meaning that you have the 4 regions of the continent, and each region has this bedrock, this foundational economy that then functions as sort of like the starting point for all the other economies in that region to be positioned around, adopt a common currency in each of the regions,
yeah,
and then you build from there. Because Helmut, 54 or 55 nations versus 27 nations is a major mathematical difference between the EU and the AU. But the EU has got greater purchasing power, greater buying power. Same thing, purchasing and buying. They've got greater buying power. They are a desired economy or sought after customer for China and its production prowess and capabilities, and even for South America with its agricultural and manufacturing prowess and capabilities.
Yeah.
But in Africa's context, we only see the EU as to buy the raw materials, which has been the greater diversification strategy that we now see in Namibia taking off and across the continent. David keeps referencing Zimbabwe as well, which Zimbabwe is one of the good examples alongside South Africa, alongside Nigeria, alongside Morocco. Morocco can stay angry with us for as long as it wants. Because I now also discovered,
you can't leave that landmass and take it somewhere.
They just have to accept it, man. They're part of us, and they are part of us. They can't even say we don't want to be part of the AU or like the AU anymore, because Western Sahara is also mentioned in this document. But the downside is, Helmut, I now understand what happened with Ceuta.
Go on.
Do you know what happened? And this shows me the underhandedness and the ugly side of specifically of North Africa, because it's not the only time I've heard about this. Last year when you and I looked at Algeria's parliament passing the anti-colonial law,
yeah,
which Macron from France,
yeah,
was like going, no, whoa, what are you guys doing? A similar thing popped up. And I didn't know that there's even like bad blood between the North African countries, between each other. And when I say bad blood,
yeah,
they have like rivalries with each other for some reason. If you guys go look at like how President Ramaphosa welcomed President Nandi Ndaitwa 2 weeks back in, yeah, South Africa.
Homies.
There's this collaborative, this friendly atmosphere here in Southern Africa. And even when our president would go to like a SADC thing, you know, everybody is happy with, everybody is welcoming with each other. And sometimes you might have your like internal issues here in Namibia or in Angola or in Zimbabwe. But when you see heads of state, ne, acting like, you know, like long lost.
Something is wrong here.
Like long lost family that are now seeing each other again. You're like, okay, you know, because sometimes you recognize the familiarity in, you know, in your own family setting, and you're like, okay, cool. You know, this friendly nature of diplomacy in Southern Africa. But then, this Ceuta incident of last year, of this past week. Ceuta, Hamoud, happened because Spain's Prime Minister Sanchez visited on a state visit Algeria. Now, Spain already has trade agreements with Morocco.
Yeah.
And then Sanchez decided to also sort of like further expand Spain's relationship with North African countries.
Yeah.
And specifically targeting Algeria. He went on a state visit to Algeria last month, in June. And these people, these 80,000 that swam and crossed over the Ceuta border into the enclave of Ceuta, the Spanish enclave. Do you know what happened when police and emergency services on the ground asked the people, who told you guys to come here and collect here at the border post? And then they said, no, the Moroccan border authorities told us to cross.
So they gave us they just said, you know, just... No, usually we would stop you, but for today, just
No. It's not like they've regularly been. There's not like a zombie movie where the zombies regularly, you know, congregate at a point. No, yeah. These people were being told you can come to the border, and you can cross
as long as you are not staying in our country.
It's not even that. They didn't even end up with that sentence because all the people that cross over are Moroccan. The Spanish authorities asked the people on the other side in Ceuta at the emergency response center that was quickly set up for them. They asked them, who told you guys to come here? And who told you guys to congregate at the border? They said, no, the Moroccan authorities told us to come here. And when we got here, they just opened the border, or they just told us, no, you can go to Ceuta. So they listened to their border officials, ne? Without actually confirming the information as to what are we doing here, which also shows you the level of misinformation that a government can participate in.
I mean, that explains why a lot of them just showed up without as much as a backpack.
Yes, Helmut. Exactly that description. Without as much... Some of those guys were still wearing like their shorty and their flip-flops, goedersa, and the t-shirt that they woke up with today. Mm-hmm. And... they just decided to swim across. Now,
be very careful of who you listen to in the world of geopolitics. 90% of the time, you're just a pawn being used in a much larger game.
Exactly. Now, this is literally what the EU authorities could establish. The games that, and this is some of the games that the North Africans play. For example, that discussion of the anti-colonial law in Algeria last year.
Yeah.
Remember one of the articles that I shared with you was an article that was translated from an Algerian French media outlet where they wrote there that there's constantly... it wasn't that guy. It wasn't that article. It was something else, a literal interview where if France does something that sort of like annoys the Algerian president or the Algerian prime minister, then the Algerian prime minister and president will just randomly make a threat towards France on Algerian state media. And then the French are like, bruh, what are you doing? And then they go like, no, don't worry about it. You know?
It's just tit for tat.
No, it's not even tit for tat. It's just, you know, political grandstanding here in our country. But then the French go like, but why must we be a scapegoat for whatever you're busy with there in your internal affairs? So it's a regular thing that this one report that we cited for our discussion of last year kept highlighting that, you know, the Algerians would sort of like throw a jab at the French, and then the French authorities, a French minister or the French president Macron would call and ask, but what are you doing? why are we the bad guys? Why are we a scapegoat in your internal politics?
Yeah.
Now, obviously, it shows, you know, in terms of the how times have changed specifically in the game of politics between countries that were colonies and countries that are colonies. I mean, for example, back in the 1950s, 1960s, you still had generations of, or you still had a generation of politicians, Helmut, that believed back then that, for example, like in the American context, when Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and some of the other particular civil rights guys, and I'm talking about in the American context, they still had politicians back then sitting in Congress and Senate in the U.S.
Yeah.
who didn't want to afford or recognize
civil rights movements.
Civil rights or equal human rights, for example. So you have to understand these things. For example, there's that famous guy that today the media commentators you will find today on YouTube from the U.S. they will use McCarthyism, the phrase McCarthyism, which comes from a senator or a congressperson, something McCarthy. This guy was the guy that established the communist witch hunt of the 1960s. And it was a witch hunt. It was an actual witch hunt where he technically asked the FBI and the CIA to look for people. Anyone that spoke a word of so, that said, yeah, the government must pay for this, you would be branded a communist or communist conspirator or communist collaborator during that particular period of the Cold War.
Yeah.
The person would be locked up. The person would be charged with some sort of treason charges and stuff like that. Now, McCarthyism is what the Americans use today as like political witch hunting, which what Donald Trump also loves to do, you know, coincidentally. But before we continue, guys, we take a short ad break.
Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my tassies is getting warm.
Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Lipura nengelo wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge Pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile ko berewa bora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. It's just a minute past the hour of 5. You're still listening to your Drive Time show with your favorite duo here on Eagle FM. That's Helmut and Dwight. If you just tuned in, this is Home Run. So we're looking at African Union's discussion around reforming the continental intergovernmental organization to make it work better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Since the 1960s, don't worry, we've been working on making it work better. Until we reached a point where the headquarter itself was donated. And look, if you are married and someone keeps buying your wife new clothes, don't be surprised when you give birth to a junior that looks like him.
Ish, Hamud.
This is the only example I had. I've been preparing for my show the whole day.
That's a brutal realization.
That's where we are right now.
That's brutal.
That's where we are right now. So, now, we want others to fund our initiatives, but we want them to stay away from our affairs.
Mm.
That's counterintuitive.
Yes, it is. It's counterproductive because it counts against you.
And look, the key point you made, which basically summarizes the whole, you know, this whole discussion you made earlier, is this whole thing can be centered around one word. It's a governance issue. What paragraph is this? Okay, you're going to have to scroll your way all the way. Okay, no. Just a... Look. There's one CEO, you know, there's one CEO in this document that I keep losing.
A CEO?
Yeah.
Who?
Russell Fryer, the CEO of UK listed Critical Metals, said a lot of things in this document. One of the things that he said was the Lobito corridor could be. He called it a game changer.
Yeah.
For the copper belt miners. Now, critical metals, according to the Lobito investment guys, critical metals holds on indirect 70% interest in Mululu Copper Belt. It's just a bunch of companies in the DRC's Katanga province through 100% owned subsidiary.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ownership and sub-ownership going on here. It's very convoluted, and I have a sneaky suspicion it's on purpose.
So, just like you and I, just like you told me yesterday, that the 600 million is to avoid irregular and illegal roadblocks. I still don't know how that economics makes sense. How do I borrow? How do I borrow, Helmut, 600 million where I can hire more police officers?
Clearly, this is not something new. This is definitely not something new.
Yeah.
This is, I think, a norm for a lot of security classes on the African continent. And that's one of those biggest problems that, again, we are not addressing on an AU level.
Yeah.
Because, look, the fact that I had to read that from an investor makes me go, okay, you know what? When a bunch of people that have been brainwashed by Western or basically general mainstream media to think that everyone in Africa is starving, it will be very difficult for me to defend ourselves from their brainwashed brains with regards to their point of view on Africa. Now, Russell said that transport costs in DRC are extremely high and subject to ongoing disruptions, citing truck driver strikes. That's one of the reasons that he pointed out as to why the transport, the transport costs are high. He pointed to several reasons why transport costs in DRC are high and why the Lobito Corridor Group would be an excellent investment to avoid all these challenges. What are some of the challenges that, the CEO of a UK listed critical metals company pointed out? Truck driver strikes. People strike when you're not addressing what they are, people strike for two reasons. One, it's either you don't have the right, legal channels like that, workers representation. That's one. Two, you have those, but these workers have been channeling their grievances through those organizations that represent them, and no one has been listening. So that's what obviously sends people into the street, or one of those many things. Now, one of the things that he pointed, he cited truck driver strike and the ongoing illegal road tolls put in place by local actors. Now, this is where I think of these things from a Namibian perspective. Do you have any idea how difficult it is for you and me to just step out of this studio and set up a roadblock and start charging money and people paying? How long will that roadblock last?
No, Helmut, you are assuming as individuals, you and me.
Yeah.
Think of organized crime. This technically means that organized crime is very prevalent. Okay, let me say organized criminal units. Yeah. Remember the 17 youths that were executed last year in DRC?
So you are talking about organized crime on the level of the Yakuza back then?
No. I'm talking about on the level of that 17 youths in DRC that were executed last year. Stay on that level.
Yeah.
Remember, Lobito Lobito is a thing from an African perspective. What was organized crime look like for you? Not from Godfather, Italian. Who made that movie? What's the guy's name? What is the director's name? Tochman. Is it Franz? No, it's not. Is it Coppola? No, it's not Coppola. Anyway, don't think of it like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or like in Asian organized crime. No, don't
There's
think
a
of
unique
it.
African perspective.
Look at it from an African perspective. Because this is technically racketeering and extortion. Remember. Hamid, you're the one with the legal mind between us. You should have identified this as racketeering and extortion.
Look, I think I'm thinking of, I think the thing is I'm thinking of it in a very, in a micro level when the thing is, is huge.
Which it is.
Yeah, because, when I read that statement, I thought maybe it's just a bunch of villagers that, decide, to set up a roadblock and start charging people. It's like you just put it, it's an organized crime. So it's much bigger to the point where in some instances, if not most of them, you have a bunch of high profile individuals involved.
Yes, which is a racket, which you just described is a racket. So these people, I mean, now the communities on the ground that are impeding on Monsieur Russell's, what's his name? Russell what?
Russell Fryer.
Yeah. Mr. Russell Fryer's, enterprise on here, on the other side of the Kavango River, is primarily because he obviously went there, technically, any extractive business goes there where, your money counts more than if you were operating in like an organized economy like Namibia or South Africa or Botswana or Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
Or even Angola or even Angola and Zambia to a large extent, because Angola and Zambia are also very organized, now after 2020, after COVID,
mm-hmm.
and after Joao Lourenço became president. But here's the major thing, Helmut. Hence the reason why when you brought up that example yesterday, because I just sometimes assume development for development. I did not realize Lobito is one of its reasons for its origins is to avoid racketeering and extortion activities by communities on the ground.
That's a painful realization.
I did not know this. Helmut, for example, in the many times that I've had like Chinese companies here on the China corner there, they love working in the various regions of Namibia. They love it. They love those Namibian communities where they contribute their corporate social responsibility activities and participate there.
Yeah.
They love it.
You made a point earlier. You heard from one guy made that point at an investment event that you attended.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, for some investors that are maybe just hell bent on making profit and more than anything else, they don't mind investing in war-torn countries because they don't have to deal with a lot of regulations. So it's very easy. Maximizing profit because of the lack of regulations and established institutions to basically hold them accountable if they play dirty. The lack of these institutions makes them to extract as much as they can for as little as they are able to offer.
Yeah.
And you know what?
And that's part of reforms. That's part of Agenda 2063.
You know, these CEOs complaining here, they are not absolutely innocent when it comes to these activities.
No, they're not.
No. Because in a way,
Fryer is based in London. Eh?
In one way or another,
he's based in London.
In one way or another,
yeah.
they help perpetuate these illegal activities by maybe giving a few brown envelope to a bunch of officials for them to take shortcuts. But the thing is, there are knock-on effects to those activities.
Helmut, brown envelope is a Namibian example, which is a conservative amount.
Oh boy.
You have to imagine duffel bags. Now you need to go into Godfather terminology here,
in terms of the quantity.
Yeah, the size of the particular, let me rather say, contribution. Because Let's also face certain particular realities now.
Yeah.
this document of Agenda 2063, where also silencing the gun appears in?
Of course.
Because violence is violence. We identify violence for being violence. Here in Agenda 2063, they cite something that's also similar, that looks similar, but this is like, which page is this? It's a page that starts with the title, A Call to Action, where the heads of state of the continent make these pledges, make these particular, because it is pledging, basically, what they're doing.
Yeah, it is.
They cite here specifically things like implementing Africa's industrial plan of action or action plan, the African mining vision at country, regional, and continental level, in particular fast-tracking the establishment of the Center for African Mineral Development, in implementing joint cross-border investments to exploit shared natural resources, promoting social dialogue, sectoral productivity, plans and regional and commodity value chains to support the implementation of industrial policies at all levels with focus on SMMEs and agribusinesses. I'm going to stop it right there because that forms under the particular subsection D, known as transform, grow, and industrialize our economies through beneficiation and value addition of natural resources. Now, clearly, this particular point emulates what we've also got in NDP6. But NDP6 tries to be a little bit cleverer in terms of identifying, firstly, that your first and foremost most important resource is the people of your country.
Yeah.
It doesn't start lopsided. It doesn't, even though the human capital element in NDP6 is a little bit further down, because we start lopsided in actual reality. You first start there. NDP6 first starts with the agricultural sector and agribusiness industrialization and the growth of that sector and all that stuff. In extent, now that I think about it, Hamoud, that first chapter of NDP6 technically sounds very similar to that one political party's manifesto that went and said factories in every constituency situation.
No.
Now that I think about it, it has a flavor of certain element of it has that hint that of that flavor. But I'm jumping the gun slightly also there. Then
Just to make a point, and then you can get to that document over why the whole silencing of the gun.
No.
Not gonna work.
No, we already know that it didn't. That has not worked. In to a broader extent, you also see in Agenda 2063 the roadmap for the AfCFTA and the greater integration of the continent across the board. There is an interesting thing that I also wish to bring in here, which forms part of the reformation, because Agenda 2063 basically should be the roadmap for the reform that Ruto highlighted. But once again, there's always a but.
Of course,
there's always a but. Not the double T one, you know. I'm talking about the connecting word in English.
That's usually my thing, but oh yeah, you're catching up.
We're not here to talk about dairy.
Up really fast.
We're not here to talk about dairy, yes. We're here to talk about the connecting word.
Yeah.
Currently, when you look at things, nah, this document, especially a 2063 document, it transformation is placed on page 21. Transformation speaks here to people's ownership and mobilization. African resources to finance its development. Now, Hamoud, sometimes I like poetic literature sometimes, but when it comes to reality, you can't put the main point of your discussion at the end of things. You know, there's one.
Start with the introduction.
There was one specific lecturer I had at NAST. Won't mention her name because I then might be promoting her prominence. She was also a former journalist. She went and cited the acceptance letter that we got for the journalism program there at NAST.
Yeah.
Where she asked us, "Did you guys read your acceptance letters?" And we said, "Yes." "Did you guys read that how long-winded the thing was. We said, yeah, it was pretty long-winded because we had to go and look for, we accept you, like three paragraphs.
Yeah, like that's what I'm looking for. Put that before you give me high blood pressure.
And even the subject line didn't say you were accepted. You are, you know, like to announce you are successful, you are accepted. No. Even the subject line.
We are pleased to inform you just the
zero. That wasn't even there. And because obviously, you know, because we're in communication and she cited now, you know, in terms of, you know, analyzing this format of formal communication of a letter, she explained, you see, the first mistake, for example, in terms of communicating such a message to an applicant of something, is that if you have to deal out the body blow, but the body blow can either be positive or negative, you know, say you are rejected or say you are approved or you're invited. Now, she cited that specific discussion because since starting, you know, and completing that degree, I've now analyzed every document from that particular perspective in terms of if Ruto mentions transformation and financing here in what page? This is the first page. Yeah. If Ruto mentions paragraph 6 here. Yeah.
That's the first page.
That's the first page.
Yeah.
If he mentions, if he references paragraph 6 here, which underscores Africa's self-reliance, financial independence, and institutional effectiveness. And that's literally after doing all the other fancy things of recalling, further recalling, noting with concern, determined, further determined. Then you get
whoever came up with this language.
Yeah. But here's the thing, Helmut. Why would you hide self-sustainability? Self-sustainability, guys, which I learned on primary school, by the way, and much of you us would have learned as well, and you out there, you would have learned that word already in primary school. Self-sustainability is placed on page 21 of a 24-page document. You place here critical enablers for Africa's transformation. That's the chapter's name, by the way, Helmut. It goes by the following. The determination, the participation, the self-reliance and solidarity of Africa's peoples.
We are coming together, Mos.
Let me finish the sentence. Good thing you're showing there. Are preconditions for success.
We're only figuring that out now.
And we therefore recognize the following as critical enablers of continental transformation.
Again.
So everything that I've been citing to you.
Yeah.
No. Up until this page, page 21 of this document.
Yeah.
No. Is a precursor to reach here. Instead of, you could have started there and flowed into why we are saying these are critical enablers. But I'm not done.
Go on.
It starts with A, the people's ownership and mobilization. The continuous mobilization of the African people and the diaspora in various formations, effective communication and outreach, effective communication, and sustained inclusive social dialogue on Agenda 2063. Where is this happening? I don't know where it's
effective
happening.
Effective communication?
Effective communication.
And I thought I was... okay, now, you see, it's a good thing you read that. Did you just say effective communication?
Yeah.
I think, let's go back to Bro William, actually African Union's words here. What is one of the reasons why the African Union needs reformation, African Union? You mind telling us? African Union is going, sure, absolutely. Just fine. Go on my website and there I went and here's the point. The African Union's complicated structure and limited managerial capacity leads to inefficient working methods, poor decision making, and the lack of accountability. And that is counter effective communication, if you ask me.
Definitely, which does not reflect the African people's ownership and mobilization capabilities, because it looks bloated. But technically, they're saying they are bloated.
You know one thing I like? Exactly, they are. You know one thing I think I like about documents like this? It's the language they are written into.
It's very easy to understand.
It's made official.
Yeah.
Which I really like, because then I can break it down to layman terms. Now, the AU is highly fragmented with too many focus. We are not talking. Shortcut. So short and simple. We are not talking. we are not talking. They could have just said, we are not talking. And then the second point, the AU is the AU's complicated structure and limited managerial capacity leads to inefficient working capacity, a poor decision making, and lacks accountability. We more often steal, and since all of us are thieves, no one can hold anyone accountable, and therefore no one would even have the the nerves to take accountability over. Well, all the questionable things that they're doing on, and also not just on their national level, but also on an AU level. The AU is neither financially independent nor self-reliant, self-sustaining, relying instead on partner funding and much of its for much of its financing. That's a very long way of saying we don't know how to manage money and we're broke as heck. Vote me to vote for me to be at the African Union, and I'll make it very simple because this is complicating things. What do you mean the African Union? What do you mean the African Union is neither financially independent? What financially? Bottom line, the African Union is broke. Simple as that. You don't have to be diplomatic. Of course, you can be because, you know, developmental partners are in attendance. But I'm in the studio. There are no developmental partners in attendance. So when you are saying the African Union is neither financially independent nor self-sustaining, all I'm hearing is the African Union is broke, full stop. That's one thing I like. But, you know, I don't like to complicate my life with Oxford-level English to say, no self-sustaining financial, you know, GDP index, the percentage. Dude, you're broke. I'm financially challenged. No, broke. Oh, boy. Boy, oh, boy. So if we have effective communication, this is the good thing of comparing and contrasting different, you know, what different documents say. If we have effective communication, how come we are calling the structure complicated? If it's a complicated structure, isn't the communication also supposed to be complicated? Okay, what do I know? So, what do we need to put in place? As a continent, you know, African Union, not Namibia. I'm glad you asked. The AU needed to focus on fewer priority areas with the continental scope. You're not answering the question. With whose money? But we have the very large youthful population, and there's a lot of potential because we have a lot of natural resources. And yeah, well, my answer to all the three just made is, yes, you have a lot of youthful population, who are unemployed, and you have a lot of natural resources under your feet. You're not helping your case here because, first of all, 90% of your income is from bribes, and you have a large number of young people that are unemployed, so you're not helping your case here. And newsflash, don't have a comedian in the studio to go through this document. Look, it's a beautiful document for making fun, not making developmental plans on, because the blueprint that not just the African Union but African countries draw in terms of where they want to be or where we want to be in the next 20, 30, 50 years, the blueprint is impeccable. Except you can bring all of them together, all the investment plans that we seek to make on this continent, both on a SADC level and on an AU level, whether it's water infrastructure, energy, health, education, you know, research and development, technology, you name it. The plans are top-notch, in the words of our former president, Angolo Mbumba. Top-notch. Except they all have, they are all more often curtailed by one question. Where's the money going to come from? That's when we start going, Well, about that. But the thing is, we keep making plans and then expecting others to finance those plans. And look, I'm not giving our developmental partners a leeway here. If anything, they're up next on my frying pan. I found an article from Human Rights Watch. And this is from 2005. And it reads as follows. They compiled, in 2005, they compiled a 159-page report. What was this report on? Again, boy, am I glad you asked. What does this report say? The report documents how local armed forces fighting for control of gold mines and trading routes have committed war crimes and crimes against humanity using the profits from gold to fund their activities and buy weapons. Why does that sound like Sudan? Oh, yeah, that's why. This is Sudan today. You know. 5-6 years after we failed to silence the guns. The report provides details of how a leading gold mining company, and Human Rights Watch here is not pulling their punches. They are just mentioning a name, we'll see. Now, the report provides details of how a leading gold mine company, Anglo Gold Ashanti, it rings a lot of South African bells. Anglo Gold Ashanti, part of the international mining conglomerate, Anglo American Development, links with one murderous armed group, the Nationalist and Integrationist Front, FNI, helping them to access the gold rich mining site around the towns and districts.
When it comes to managing your investments, should you rely on one expert or a team of specialists? With a multi-managed portfolio from Alex Forbes, your funds are guided by carefully selected investment experts working together to pursue more consistent outcomes. We pair the right managers behind the scenes so you don't have to manage multiple relationships. Strengthen your investment destination. Visit alexforbes.com today.
Alex Forbes Namibia is registered and regulated by NAMFISA.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. So let's continue where I left off. Dwight?
Where you left.
Yeah. Where I left off was C.
Yeah.
Now that's English with a Thimbukusho accent. Where I left off was C.
What was that word in Thimbukusho again for the other thing that you explained back on Tuesday?
Oh no.
What was that word again?
Oh no.
That look, translates to wagon or something at the behind.
Oh, Thikoto or Shikoto.
That was yesterday's talk. That was yesterday.
Look,
so someone shouldn't have a lisp and then try to pronounce Oshikoto and then end up saying Othikoto.
Yeah, if you say Othikoto and there's a kavango nearby, they'll be thinking about a trailer. Look, that's one thing I find fascinating about language. Because you have a very innocent word in your own language. You know what the Russian word for book is?
Yeah.
Книга.
What?
Книга.
The for which word?
Book. Like your book. Actually, a notebook is a teeth rads. Yeah, teeth rads is your notebook, but a book just in general.
General, yeah.
Knicker. Okay. So that sends a lot of Americans going, what did you just say?
What did you call me? languages.
So Oshikoto and Thikoto, well, they sound similar.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Oshiwambo word for I think throat.
Mm.
Yeah. Don't say that out loud in front of Kapango, so you're gonna get beaten up.
Can I ask what's the word?
You want us to get fired?
You must
Look, languages are very fascinating when you start comparing words.
Okay. No, that's fair enough.
Yeah. The first time I think that's in 2015. One a friend of mine, he was just, he was on a phone call.
Mm.
So he kept using the word a lot. So I asked him. I asked him what the word means. And
he's Oshiwambo speaking.
He's Oshiwambo speaking. Yeah. So then he translated, and it's like, it's like a throat.
Mm. According to you, because you kept hearing this word, you were just thinking,
I was thinking that
other word.
Word, yeah. Anyway, come back to the African Union. Languages are fascinating. You should look
and
into
reformation. Nice.
Yeah. So continent. African Union and reformation.
Yeah.
So what was I? On the whole, investment discussions. Those ones, that gentleman that said there are some investors that actually prefer to invest in chaotic environments.
Yep.
And tie that point to the whole idea of DRC was entertaining a few weeks ago about arming a bunch of militias to protect mines.
Mm.
That idea, and you tie it to Mr. Russell Frere's concern about illegal toll roads being set up by local actors. And now
racketeering and extortion.
Yeah. In 2005, Human Rights Watch compiled a 159 pages report where they said the report provides the details of how a leading gold mining company, Anglo Gold Ashanti, part of the international mining conglomerate, Anglo American developed links with one murderous armed group, the Integrationalist Front, FNI, helping them to access the gold rich mining sites around the town of Mobwalu in northeastern Ituri district.
Ituri that's now suffering from the Ebola outbreak.
You know what? This is RSF today.
That FNI.
RSF
is
the Rapid Support Force in Sudan. They've been accused of basically the Rapid Support Force and the SAF, the Sudan Armed Forces.
Yeah.
They've all been accused of using natural resources to fund their military activities.
Definitely. Yeah.
And it turns out, well, it's not something that's new. And why are they funding all this? Why would a bunch of armed guys use their country's natural resources to fund terrorism activities? If they, one thing is for sure. Yes, they have access to the resources. They have a bunch of guns surrounding all these resources.
Mm.
Who is buying?
Yep.
Because someone is buying.
Yeah. And someone is selling.
Yeah. They are selling.
No. There's three people in this transaction. Mm. You see, you are the RSF.
Yeah.
Now you're taking out the gold.
Yeah.
You're selling it to the UAE.
Mm-hmm.
We see that first point.
Yeah.
You have to look at the person that when the RSF gets the money from the UAE for the gold.
Yeah.
Who's selling the bullets, the supplies, the guns?
Yeah, who is? Because they also have to procure those.
Yes, that's the reason why an army is selling a resource. They need guns. They need ammo. They need fuel. Here's the weirdest part, now.
Yeah, exactly. When you think of it in terms of resupplying an army, it's kind of difficult to do without legitimate, global players. It's almost borderline impossible because, first of all, you have to move the money.
Yeah.
How do you move it? You are using institutions that are established.
And remember, the Sudanese army is in charge of all the oil fields. Do you think the Sudanese army is giving refined petroleum products to the rapids of port forces? No, they're not.
No, they're not. Someone is supplying them that.
The South Sudanese are not talking to either of these two entities because the South Sudanese fought against these two entities. They are also sitting with oil fields.
Oh, yeah.
No, they're not. So where is the RSF getting oil from? Let's say fuel for their hardware from.
Now, when you think of it in terms of hardware, supplies and medicines and food and all that, you can't help but think.
And then ask yourself.
This is.
And then ask yourself, who's buying Sudanese oil?
Yeah.
Because the Sudanese army is in charge of the oil fields.
Yeah.
The same thing also with like Libya. On one side of the country, I think like there are oil fields in both halves of the country that split into two. Who's buying Libyan oil? Someone is buying this oil, Helmut.
It gets worse back in 2007 then. Back in 2007, the UN peacekeepers were implicated in all kinds of smuggling, really.
Really? Because they were from where?
This was in DRC.
I still don't believe that story, Ahmad, of the UN peacekeepers. I think the US peacekeepers are being targeted. In all honesty, I think they are being targeted. Because how do you have a story? Remember last year when we did the DRC discussion? Just before that conflict broke out, the peacekeepers were accused of rape and murder and pillaging by the exact community of then East DRC.
Yeah.
And when those guys stood to one side, all they did was just go and confine themselves in the base, the base that they had there in that part of East DRC. When they did that, when they withdrew literally from their patrols and their activities, the war broke out. The fighting broke out. Why do things look suspicious? Why do they smell of suspicion? Huh? And remember, you and I, we dissected the what's the UN report? Because the UN, the peacekeeping mission has a name that supplies reports to the UN Security Council. When you and I looked at that report, because I supplied you also with the report, the UN guys did not say that they were investigating themselves. They weren't saying that in that report. All they cited was just there's a breakdown between them. And relevant stakeholders in maintaining peace. And the situation is becoming untenable because they are facing animosity.
Okay, now, this whole story of UN peacekeepers being implicated in something questionable in DRC went pretty mainstream back in, somewhere from 2005 all the way to 2007. And the thing is, you are not wrong because we're talking about geopolitics here. Mm. There's a lot of money involved. Mm. So there's obviously a lot of sabotage involved. There's also a lot of sabotage involved. Now, according to Human Rights Watch here, they were expressing their gratitude to some degree that we welcome the recent announcement about the conclusion of the Office of Internal Oversight Services OIOS investigation into alleged gold smuggling and arms trading by Pakistani peacekeepers working with the UN Peacekeepers Force in the Democratic Republic of Congo. We believe that such investigations are useful part of the process of establishing accountability for peacekeepers alleged to have been involved in illegal acts. Then it goes on to say that we are, however, disappointed by the apparent narrowness of the report's conclusion, the lack of transparency in the process of slow progress in the investigation, and most importantly, the continuing lack of accountability. The British Broadcasting Corporation (BBC) on July 13, I'm assuming it's this 2007,
yeah,
that this matter is now closed. Yet no individual has yet been held accountable, despite finding by OIOS, the investigative arm of the United Nations, that illegal behavior by at least one Pakistani officer had occurred. Surely a report confirming illegal acts by the UN peacekeepers is not the end of a process, but the beginning.
Mm. But look also how small the margin of error is. It was one officer. The label was all the peacekeepers are others.
Yeah, Pakistani peacekeepers working with... And now, this is not the first time that I'm finding, you know, a Pakistani businessman getting involved in, you know, in this. Mm. The thing is, you know, you're looking at a Pakistani peacekeeper working with the UN, working with the UN peacekeepers.
He is a peacekeeper or
Pakistani peacekeepers working with UN peacekeepers.
Okay.
Yeah. Forces in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And we believe that such investigation, but the most important part that I wanted to see here is, we welcome the recent announcement about the conclusion of office of the of internal investigation. So there are internal investigations going on here. But the thing is, even if there were 1 or 100 peacekeepers were involved, I would still look at that as the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
Because you don't run the show by being on the ground.
You are present, you are visible, yes, but you're not running the show.
You're not running the show.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, now you have to understand, at least from my point of view, at the center of this whole thing is, you know, it's basically very human, basic human nature, greed. It doesn't matter what you are going to call your organization. You can have, religious organizations have been implicated in all kinds of dubious activities.
Mm.
So having investigations like this, one thing that I admire in terms of this story, especially from the UN point of view, is they have internal, like any organization, you know, you'd expect this from any organization, especially the organization of this size.
Mm.
They have internal investigation mechanisms. Yeah, because anyone can make a claim, so you need internal investigation mechanisms, because that's not your way of not just cleaning house, but that's your way of ironing out issues, because sometimes your staff can just be accused.
Yeah,
how are you going to find out if they are being accused or they really did what they are being accused of?
Yeah.
So internal mechanisms, excellent idea. Now, when you tie that into, you know, RSF and the use of different, militia groups, the use of natural resources to arm and, and resupply themselves, you can't help but ask yourself very simple questions of where are these products finding themselves? Because definitely someone is buying, and more often, a lot of multinational corporations, established multinational conglomerates, are more often implicated in things like, in things like this.
Mm.
And that's that for me makes the point that gentleman made at that investment event he attended, that there are other investors that look at a chaotic political environment or a war-torn country as a good option in terms of investment because of the lack of regulations.
Yeah.
So it's very easy to get out of pretty much anything.
It is. Chaos, obviously, or chaotic situation, obviously breeds other particular problematic scenarios. I am, however, a little bit perplexed also in terms of achieving the goals, or I don't know. They don't say goals. They just say we have to get here in certain scenarios in the African continent, but we've had coups since 2020, or we've seen a spike of coups since 2020.
Yeah.
Successful ones. and we
some questionable salary increments.
Quest that too. We've seen an escalation in the East DRC conflict scenario. We've seen two African countries fall into civil war status, which was Ethiopia in 2020, which makes things very, very sensitive, primarily because how does the country that hosts
the AU
become unstable? How do you have a scenario like this?
I think it's expected. Like every country has its own tense topics and tight, or more like tense neighboring relations.
No, imagine the scenario. Yeah. Okay, so the best template we can always use is the EU.
Yeah.
The European Central Bank sits in Germany. The EU Commission sits...
Wait, I thought it was in Brussels.
Yeah, it's in Brussels. The Commission sits also in Brussels. There's something else that sits in Germany. There's another entity that sits in Germany.
Oh.
But they've got like this representation of certain particular like multilateral organizations sitting in various aspects of predominantly Western Europe. Let me also identify that, which is very stable. Now, how do you think, like in an AU context, for AU to move forward, much of AU organizations are based in shaky or slightly less stable African countries. For example, remember the subject that you and I, we were slightly not disappointed, but we were shocked at that this discussion was represented by countries who flew to the, what was the event that they flew to again in the US? Where our president was?
You're right on your earlier point. Sorry for dragging you to hell. Mm. The European Central Bank is in Frankfurt.
Yeah. It's in Germany. Yeah. What event was that again? You remember the African countries that when spoke about the African Central Bank idea at that US, was it a US or was it a UN platform? How do we have countries now that, yes, they are a good template for how 3, 4, 5 countries that you and I counted in that discussion, when we analyzed that, yes, they are an example of how to have a shared currency. They are almost a template.
Yeah.
Shared, them and the ECOWAS guys. A shared currency and also have a central bank. Because the central bank is based in your favorite country.
Central African Republic.
It's either that one or Chad, one of the two. It's based in one of the two countries. And Cameroon is also part of that collection of those countries.
Say what now?
Yeah, Cameroon shares a currency with
them. Oh no, I know about Cameroon. African Central Republic. What criteria are we following here?
Exactly. But those people believed that those representatives were the best guys to go talk about the AU Central Bank, which you and I analyzed from this document as well, at that level back in, was it last year, man? Yeah, it was back, or was it the World Economic Forum at the start of this year? Went and discussed that idea there for a broader Africa. The unfortunate scenario I am witnessing here, Helmut, is that if we really want to see the goals that is contained within Agenda 2063 actually manifest in reality, the goals have to speak towards, firstly, that statement that you read a little bit later, which is under the reformation plan here in this other document of the resolutions, declarations, and decisions. We've got to improve on communication. We can't send the smallest economies on the continent. Yes, they have individual sovereignty and uniqueness to them, but we can't send them to go speak about on behalf of like an AU agenda. Because you're supposed to send an AU representative. You were supposed to send Ali Yusuf, for example. But it was a lady from the development, the African Development Bank, that was accompanying that foreign, that finance minister from that central bank agency. That central bank agency. Because technically it's a central bank agency of five countries. That was a good idea, sending those guys.
Yeah.
But a development bank person is not a central bank person. A development bank person is a development bank. All they have to measure is impact. Is the money I'm dispensing resulting in real change, results, and, you know, fruitful outcomes? Or is the planning just flawed and let's re-strategize, redevelop the policies, realign them, and then we dispense money again? Which sounds very bank-ish.
Okay, let's also, and I think this is a thing about looking at it from a broader, not idealistic, but a realistic point of view.
Yeah.
Let's just picture a scenario here. Let's just use your wildest imagination, because you're going to need it on this one. Picture a scenario where each and every single African country is domestically in charge of its own natural resources in terms of mining and processing. A lot of countries in the global north are going broke.
Mm.
A lot of countries in the global north are going broke.
Mm.
Now, what are the chances, do you think, again, not idealistically, realistically, that they would allow themselves to be broke?
Yeah.
Because I know I wouldn't. There is no way on God's green earth would I do that. And this is a part of the, you know, this is actually a part of a very interesting part about, you know, foreign relations. The thing is, you cannot, cordon off Africa, because we still need, we need trade relations, diplomatic relations, for not just for economy, but also for, you know, for basically overall for economy, because you need it for, you know, for your goods, for to gain skills for people and all that. And human beings, we are just we're not tigers,
yeah.
We are not solitary creatures, we are social creatures. So as much as we like to get on each other's throats, we need each other.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. You know how you like to say that the British has this way of, had this way of leaving a little bit of some hooks into your country's when they were leaving.
Was it Richard Wolff that said that?
Yeah, Richard Wolff.
Yeah, he said that.
Yeah, and now that
they won't let you go
because they would be broke.
Yes,
it's not rocket science.
Yes. It's either there's a company or there's a specific law,
yeah,
that you had to agree to, that's in your constitution.
Remember they don't raid?
Yeah.
Yeah, when they left...
Was that example that you also cited?
Yeah, but they don't raid. When they left Indonesia, they knew that, they politically left Indonesia. Economically, they didn't, because they still had the, you know, Guthrie Limited or something.
Mm.
That was owning a large chunk of land in that country. So politically, they could easily say, okay, you know what? We are not in that country anymore. We gave them their independence.
Mm.
But their economy, for their economy to work out, they needed that piece of land that was still largely under the control of the British.
Mm.
And so they just decided to, you know, well, play their own game.
Yep.
And, was Margaret Thatcher was fuming when she found out the next day that Guthrie had lost, or basically by extent the British, they had lost a large chunk of land that the previous day they were in charge of in that portion, you know, in that part of the world. So when you look at it, so there are basically two ways of looking at this. There is really not in a very conspiratorial way that we like to talk about it, the difference between political and economic independence.
Mm.
But the thing is, a political independence is very easy to give you, you know, be the president, make your own laws, but don't touch the money.
Yeah.
That's where a lot of African countries are.
Yeah.
Which is why even in Southern Africa, one of the most interesting topic that is still hush-hush in especially in between Namibia and South Africa is South African Reserve Bank money. Who's in charge? That's one of those topics that that I find fascinating in South Africa, because it's one of those topics that pops up and it goes down. Mm-hmm. It pops up and it goes down. Because, well, people are just naturally curious. We're going to ask questions.
Mm.
And for a very long time period after a lot of African countries got their independence, a lot of us were more on, you know, political campaigns, you know, treating the former liberation struggle fighters now, you know, turned public officials like, you know, with a near divine type of treatment.
Yeah.
And then with time, we, you know, the education level climbed. Now, the more the education level or literacy rate climbed, a lot of people started asking questions about, okay, thank you very much for the independence and all this, but who's in charge of our economy? How do we establish establish trade economies? Because we want to grow like those ones.
Mm.
What can we do in order for us to grow like the other, like all the developed countries?
Mm.
Now, to try and find answers for these questions, we found out that for a lot of countries that claimed to have left, didn't really leave.
No. No, it didn't.
I think that's where you know, the whole, you know, neocolonialism concept was now, you know, popped up.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's actually coming from the new colonialism dimension. The talking point, basically, Helmut, that also stems from what we've identified here, just before we get to the topic there at six, is we also have to take seriously the first, what is this first pillar of Agenda 2063 series? Because some cases I even wondered to myself, do some of these countries really know what is contained within the document itself? Because you can't just go and mention or cite a document in some cases and then not. Okay, technically they do know that us, most of us Africans probably have never seen this document. We just hear of Agenda 2063.
Yeah.
But when you get to the first particular goal that they cited, because there are seven goals throughout this 24-page document. The first one is a prosperous Africa based on inclusive growth and sustainable development. So, inclusivity technically is the opposite of saying exclusive, right? Right. Inclusivity also depicts a picture where you've got to...
Let's incorporate everyone.
Yeah, you've got to think about everybody.
Yeah.
Sudan today does not speak to anything about inclusivity. Because a war is an us and them argument with bullets in.
And that's just internally.
That conflict that happened between Eritrea and Ethiopia, that was an us and them argument again.
And it's still tense to this day.
Yeah. The East DRC is an argument between DRC and Rwanda over unresolved things from 1994, which you and I already identified.
Does not speak into
inclusivity as well. Goal number two, an integrated continent, politically united and based on ideals of Pan-Africanism and the vision of Africa's renaissance. The three examples I just mentioned to you. Eritrea and Ethiopia have tried to mend relations.
Yeah.
Like before COVID, they've tried. But then obviously that conflict happened in the civil war, happened in Ethiopia. We obviously saw some sort of a healing of relations that Qatar achieved, which we still till the day cannot understand how Qatar got it right. Which then resulted in the dodgy agreement, Helmut, that you cited in terms of why are two countries signing a peace agreement if the people on the proxies are not there to sign the agreement, which technically spells out to the world they basically acknowledge that they are behind the proxies, Helmut.
Yeah, that's a clear acknowledgement.
That signing ceremony, guys, if you've ever wanted acknowledgement of guilt, the fact that the DRC minister and the Rwandan minister were sitting right next to each other signing a peace agreement.
Of a conflict that was supposed to be caused by two armed groups from both countries.
Not
from
caused,
different countries.
Not caused. That is fought by two armed groups.
Yeah.
Armed groups, not armies, which are official groups of a government.
Just a bunch of armed groups.
Just a bunch of armed thugs that have guns. An admission of guilt was presented.
It was all over that whole thing.
Man.
Now.
You know, if you want admissions of guilt, go do what those two ministers did.
Look, that was just pathetic to watch, beginning from Doha all the way to Washington. Because, you know, for a very long time, what you're telling me is, okay, you know what, this war, I have nothing to do with it.
No, but both the DRC and the Rwandan governments have been telling the world, but we are not behind these entities.
Those are just, a bunch of trigger happy guys just causing all those chaos with, it has nothing to do with us.
And the world kept asking them, but the one is operating from your country, and the other one is operating from your country. How do you not know?
That's just accusations, Rick Ross. False accusations.
Baseless
accusations. And then, all right, we have now reached an agreement. Now send those guys to come and sign an agreement. And then you show up. Hang on a second.
And then the other one shows up. And you're like, whoa.
Okay, easy here now.
Why the government here?
Yeah, why is the government here?
Where are your leaders? Those proxies?
The proxy that have been causing all the
mayhem. What are you talking about? Don't worry, we're here to sign.
No, if you are here to sign, that means you are signing on their behalf.
Or?
You are representing them, Abby.
Or? You are admitting that it was you all along?
Yeah. Look, that peace agreement is the reason why I can never be caught joining a terrorist group, because I always picture myself as, take for example, part of the M23 guys, probably one of the shortest, part of the M23 guys.
You'd be the oldest.
Yeah, because it's just a bunch of teenagers for the most part. Now, here's the thing. One thing that you see here is I am running around in the jungle, literal jungle, with a gun risking slay snakes and all those.
Elmut, what did I just say? You'd be the oldest. If you're the oldest, you're in charge. You're not running anyway.
Don't give me ideas. But now,
look, I'm just identifying facts.
Yeah, look, the thing is, I'm in charge of the jungle.
With gumboots on, remember?
Yeah. But when it comes to sitting in air-conditioned room signing agreements, you are in charge, are you?
No, Hamoud, you're misunderstanding this. Think of the racketeering that you explained.
So I'm in charge somewhere in the capital?
No, you're in charge somewhere there in the jungle.
Remember,
you need to stay hidden. We don't need to know. The world should not know who's the face of M23. You need to stay hidden. That's why you can't come out of the jungle.
You know, for a comedian, I don't see that working out.
I know. You need to stay hidden. Definitely, there are enemies on the other side of the border who know probably who you are.
Yeah.
And you know who those enemies are.
Yeah.
The downside is also a scenario of you are technically representing a government directive.
So you have a bunch of guys that are armed to the teeth protecting you all the time.
No, Hamoud. You staying hidden is your protection.
Me staying hidden?
Yeah.
Okay, now I have one question. What's the difference between that and jail?
Because you staying hidden means that you are expendable. You can get rid, you know, the one financing you can get rid of you very quickly.
Expandable.
Yes, you are not expandable, that is to expand, to make big. Expendable. You are worth sacrificing. There's no value holding on to you.
Because no one is going to ask questions because no one knew you in the first place.
Yeah, boy. Now, which organizations operate like that, Almut?
Terrorist organizations?
No. Terrorists run on the principle of literally operating on a very small operation. But as you and I know, M23, which walks to a mining site, does not operate on a very small operation or scale. Only intelligence operations operate like that.
Holy cow.
The Pakistanis do the same thing when they keep supplying Pakistani Al-Qaeda who supplies Afghan Al-Qaeda, which has now backfired on the Pakistani ISI, because the whole world and India kept telling the world and the Americans, specifically the CIA, stop giving the ISI money.
Okay, that's not something new. I mean, they fund the Sandinistas, the Mujahideen that has... Yeah. Broke out of a cocoon, and then a bunch of armed groups popped out, including
our favorite guy, the Al Qaeda.
Yeah, including Al Qaeda and the Taliban. So these are all because at the center of this, you just have a bunch of governments, because governments have your intelligence communities, and they give funding.
That government gives funding to that intelligence organization.
Yeah, the intelligence organization keeps funding a bunch of armed guys, and those very same government officials keep showing up at the UN every year at the UN General Assembly saying, this world needs more peace and security. Dude, you're arming a bunch of militias.
You are the reason why there's no peace and security in your neighborhood.
Yeah.
Yeah. But before then, guys, we're quickly going to take a short break, come back right after that.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshuala. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanoa na monika ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe mbali heali nola natu heali mbali no heali. Ile kumberewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
And coming back to listeners, we quickly just had a quick change up specifically for this particular session, or for the last hour here on your number one talk radio station. And specifically while I'm just waiting for David just to make his entrance, it'll just be myself and David taking the conversation forward. And as I sometimes always do in terms of my level of liberalism, you can also still participate here on your number one talk radio station, specifically here on The Home Run. You can call through at 083-288-401. I want to hear your particular take as well. And just as David is about to make his entrance, that particular point that we were dissecting just before the break, a point which is central and focal. And good day, David.
Yes. What's up?
I'm okay, man. I'm okay. How's your side?
No, I'm doing well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
David, so far we've been dissecting some of the parts of the AU's reform plan. And the reform plan is based upon Agenda 2063.
Yeah.
Just where we left off, Helmut and I. And obviously you're just now catching us sort of like at the main core point of, do we really understand what reform means as Africans?
Yeah, we do understand.
So we know the language?
No, we understand the language.
We can read English.
We can read English. No, Africa has best intellectuals.
Do you remember the video I showed you last night?
Yeah.
The Maori one.
Yeah, I've seen.
Yeah. So,
Yes. You know, the issue of reform is possible. We still have time.
Yeah.
Until 2063.
Yeah.
There was one argument which was brought by young people in South Africa. that is indicating that, Neman, these people who brought this Agenda 2063, yes, it's a very good plan.
Mm.
But by 2063, we are not going to hold them accountable anymore because they are not going to be here.
Yeah.
That's something that was indicated. But looking at the aspect of aspiration for the Africa that you want.
Yeah.
That is one of the, it's a big document. And when you also look at it, it's also something that gave birth to Africa Continental Free Trade Area.
Yeah.
If you look into that, that is one of how do they call it, friendship program.
Yeah.
Of Agenda 2063. But, you know, there is a lot of things that we need to do. One thing which I'm always saying is that apart from us complaining, apart from us having conferences and presentation, let's just first work on recommendation.
Mm.
Because most of the studies that are done, even by Africans, they have recommendations. But it will work on recommendations before we go and study the problem. And reform to reach Agenda 2063, did we also achieve our goals that we set by 2025? Helmut was always giving an example. He likes silence of the guns.
Yeah.
Yeah, to say, guys.
No, it's also in there.
Yeah. No, I know the document. I look at,
they have a special chapter for it.
Yeah. But one thing which I'm always looking at, if you look at the aspiration of Africa that you want, Thabo Mbeki likes speaking about it to say, in Africa where development is human-centered,
mm.
in Africa where, Africa that is globally competitive, are we globally competitive? In Africa where development is human-centered, where mm. Africa of peace and prosperity. But is that really the Africa that we have now?
Yeah.
But there's something that we need to look at. But one thing also that we need to look at is the studies are always done. The studies are always done. Last year, when you look at APRM review for last year, which I think I spoke about it also, we discussed about it with you.
Yeah.
The one which is striking to say is countries such as Namibia, is countries such as...
USAFE's customers love combos, right? Well, for just 589 Namibian dollars, you can get 10 kilogram Champion Super Maize Meal, 10 kilograms of Bokomo Fed Coot Flour, 10 kilograms of Marathon of Brown or White Sugar, 5 kilos of Nice Rice, plus 1 kilo of Grande Pasta. That's just 589 Namibian dollars for 5 essential products. The ShopRite Group buys bulk, so you can save. Yes, we all save at USAFE.
And we come back to listeners there from the quick break. And you're still here on your number one talk radio station. This is The Home Run during your drive time period from 4 to 7. And David, you were still making a point there.
Yeah, I was looking at last year, 2025 APRM review. I think I shared the report with you.
Yeah.
That is tracking the implementation of Agenda 2063 within countries. The recommendation that... Namibia is given. These are recommendations that were already given in 2022 also. To say, put your structures together.
Mm.
You are fragmented.
Mm.
Have coordinated statistics. And it's the same thing that we are continuous saying. But looking at the reform and also looking at the aspiration, maybe we also gonna be unfair if we don't look at what Africa has done well from the initiation of those aspirations. Have we done well in terms of governance? Have we done well in terms of...
Helmut and I, we saw that they use a different word in the Reformation.
Yeah.
Take accountability.
Yeah. Have we done well in terms of accountability?
But it speaks to governance.
Yeah, I hear you. It's part of it. Have we done well?
We don't know. I'll be conservative, ne?
Yeah.
I'll say straightforward.
Mm.
We don't know. Us the regular Africans, like the regular Namibians, we don't know.
In terms of economic integration, when it comes to...
A definite no, David.
But when it comes to regional economic bodies, maybe you can give a credit somehow.
SADC.
Yeah, SADC is moving. ECOWAS is also moving. We must also credit ECOWAS. Even IAC.
With cracks. you know ECOWAS is with cracks.
Yeah, but compared to the ECOWAS of the past 20 years ago, you can see that they are moving. They are looking at one currency. I see this time they are also looking at connecting pipeline transportation from Nigeria to connecting with Europe. You see, there are things that are moving, but the pace is very slow. The pace is very slow. But one thing that we also need to look at is that if you want to look at the continental level, you don't have a continent without a constituency, without a country. Because if we are doing it well here in Namibia, because one of the symptoms that is going to be seen at the continental level is when we don't do good things at the country level.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why there is nothing like Africa without countries. That is our whole responsibilities, because when I look at this report, when I look at the assessment of SADC, the assessment of Africa in terms of progress, I also look at Namibia to say, if they are saying Africa is not coordinated in terms of institution, can I also look at Namibia? If I say Africa is not, if they say Africa is not peaceful, but I look at Namibia, I say, no, maybe we are not there. Here we are doing very well.
Yeah.
But it's a very interesting topic, especially to look at continental progress and also to look at the attempt to reform. But what I'm always saying is that as far as we have this discussion, as far as you look at things that are happening in Kenya, in South Africa, in Egypt, you start seeing that if you are saying majority of Africans, 70% of African are young people below the age of 30, you start seeing that it's undeniable that the future is going to be determined by the young people.
Yeah.
Then are they interested? And if they are interested, what progress are they making?
Yes.
Because even in Namibia, it's undeniable. We can say whatever we want to say. We can say the elders are taking our position and all these things. But generational transformation is already happening. The question is that, are we filling that gap? Because after 10 years, you are not going to complain anymore. You are going to account for those.
And then I'll be the old guy in the equation.
Yeah, you'll be the old guy in the equation.
Yeah.
And that is how interesting life is, to say, I can complain now to my parents. But after just few years from now,
yeah,
then you also look at yourself to say, how did the game change?
Yeah. We became older.
Yeah, you are becoming old. And the question is that, are you doing what you are supposed to do, or you are just at your own survival?
It's a good thing you're citing that as well, David, because the conversation that we had on Friday with the Africa Youth Report for 2026.
Yeah.
Now, incidentally, you remember the what's the guy's name, that the American that passed away, Lindsey Graham.
Yeah.
Yeah. Recently, Lindsey Graham's legacy is now under the spotlight by various journalists and media out there and common media commentators, where they also now realize that America also sits with a huge problem.
Yeah.
This thing of the young and the old, aligning America's, actual goals in terms of advancing into a new future. But how does that speak to even a youth, American youth, you know, prospects and their ambitions and their hopes and goals versus the lawmakers that are all above 60.
Yeah.
Very few of them are, you know, below 40 or in their 40s. But a majority of the lawmakers in the US are above 60. And then I sat there going, like, looking at the language they use.
Yeah.
Here, the same language you just used now in terms of, like, the youth, looking after the youth.
No, things are going to change.
But the American analysis in that one article, I didn't read the article to extent, because I could see, I could literally see what is in Namibia, what is in Africa.
Yeah.
You know, what we need to be aware of. I could see that that's what that author is highlighting there. The dimension from that was they don't care even whether they have a youth or not, but we are speaking about a youth. We've got to work towards a future and sustainably maintain that future. But then the downside is we are bogged down, David, by a conflict like the Sudan conflict that still doesn't make sense to anyone.
Yeah.
You and I know, and Helmut, which just stepped out, we all know the plan on the table for the Sudanese civilian was transition from a military government to a civilian government.
Yeah.
And when it came to the deadline, one of the military factions went like, but hey, now it's now also my time to be in charge.
Yeah, as long as you have natural resources in Africa and you don't have coordinated policies.
Yeah.
As long as you have natural resources in Africa and you don't have coordinated policy that are protecting those natural resources, you don't have clear tax regulation, the international players, the big boys of economics, they always find a way to put you in chaos so that they can take your resources. Sudan is not the only case. You can talk about DRC.
Yeah.
What was happening in Angola is only that Angola and Angolan, they realized later that this fight is not... It's not what we are thinking it is. It's not a fight of tribes.
It doesn't benefit the whole country.
Yeah, it doesn't benefit everybody.
Yeah.
What you can also look at the past history of Namibia and many other countries where you have new resources. You always have somebody from outside.
I mean, the South Africans also realized it wasn't, it's not beneficial holding on to Namibia.
Yeah, it's not beneficial. Yeah. Then you ask yourself a question to say, African Union as an institution, is it a united institution?
Yeah. Is there a sense of unity? Do we even?
Do we speak with one voice? We are not speaking with one voice.
Yeah,
are we helping each other to solve continental problems?
Mm.
How come African leaders have a problem and then we run to have a presentation in the USA? No, it's not correct.
I almost thought you were going to use Helmut's example when we dissected the National Planning Commission.
No, it's not right because if we have problems in the village, let's go to the headman.
Yeah.
But I jump the village, I jump the next village, I go to, okay, let me say I have a problem from Msati region, just for example. Then I jump from Msati, I want to talk to somebody in Karas to solve my problem. That is already showing that we do not know what we want within our village. But it's also a matter of a colonial legacy. And I start realizing that a colonial legacy is something that is very difficult to take out within years.
Oh, yes.
Because it went into our thinking. It is embedded in our institutions until we realize that. Until we start realizing that we are not enemies with each other. This political slogan that we put, this one is a leftist and what, but it's not really that thing.
Mm.
It's a matter of a colonial legacy that is in our mind, that is in our institution.
Mm.
After we change that, then we understand who the real problem is.
Mm.
Then we can change, because African Union just condemning with statement and is not putting money there.
Mm.
To help people that are dying in DRC of
Ebola,
of war, Ebola, and Sudan has been declared as a worst humanitarian crisis. There was a time, sometimes maybe people are saying you are judging because you are not in that position. There was a time the president of Kenya was really begging you, United States of America, to say, no, we are going to lose, you know, the type of AGOA.
Mm.
Say, no, we are going to lose, please, 60,000 people are going to lose jobs and all these things. We just want to sit up and say, man, chief,
find your own market.
Let's deal with our problems at home. Have you ever seen the United States caring about what this is made in Africa? No, they need us, but they are not influenced to that extent that they are not going to eat tomorrow.
Mm.
But the question is also the unity of Africa. You look at African institutions. African institution is still being based by who is this guy from PDM at one point at the Pan-African Parliament said, no, you guys, you don't want to give us Isvenani. you don't want to give us the presidency of Papa. You are using the tyranny of numbers because the agrophones, they are not allowed.
Was that 2021?
Yeah, I think it's 2021. Say, no, stop using the tyranny of numbers to push the agenda.
Yeah.
But it's still happening, although there is a bit of a change, it's still happening. Look at who is leading African continental institution. Who is leading the African Union Commission?
Mm.
Who is leading the African African Development Bank?
It's interesting that the PAP is based in South Africa.
Yeah.
But you've got AfriExim in Cairo.
Yeah.
The headquarters of AU is in Ethiopia.
Mm.
The Development Bank is in what's that?
I think it's not in Nigeria. I know which.
Is it not? It's between Tunisia and Nigeria.
Yeah, yeah.
Then there's the other Outer Nepad. Is it also in Egypt? But it's predominantly in the top part.
Yeah, there was a time
above the equator.
Myself and Kaveh, we were speaking about almost the same topic, but we are looking at who is leading African institutions. You will be shocked. Even the caucusing, because those institutions are political. There was one guy, very exceptional, from Zambia, called Dr. Kamaimbo. Dr. Kamaimbo, at one point, he was contesting for the position of the president of African Development Bank. You have to go through leaders and caucus and all these things, but you, at the end of the day, you realize that you do not have numbers. You do not have numbers, and there is always that thing to say, these guys are just Southern Africa, or these guys are English-speaking, or we are French. But that guy, I'm not saying the one who is there is not well qualified, but he was supposed to balance things because most of his time, he spent it with World Bank and International Monetary Fund, and he understand it. And even in his presentation, he was indicating to say, this is what I'm seeing from the world. If you are moving this agenda, this is what I'm going to do. But you can't pick a person. You need to follow that process, which will continue for us to be divided. You know, the funny thing is that also nobody is fighting us as Africans. We are fighting ourselves to praise somebody outside. And now the colonial system has is dead. Nobody is fighting us. We are fighting ourselves. And it's quite interesting to look at this topic and also to look at Agenda 2063, because Agenda 2063, we are going to become a grandfather. We are going to be grandfathers.
Most of us will have pensions and we wouldn't even care.
Yeah. No, we will not even care. But the thing is also that in this process of reaching there, are we connected? Are we together? That's why in the discussions in discussion, especially in Namibia, I'm always advising to say we have unseen generational conflict.
And they say, and we don't know it.
Yeah, we don't know it.
We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know it.
We have the report.
Yeah.
But we it's not like we are looking at it and saying it now needs to be the focus of our discussions going ahead.
No, we haven't seen generational conflict because you have adults or elder generation, then we have majority of young people. The elders are saying, no, we know exactly what you want, this is what we're going to do. This one are saying, no, that is not what you want, this is where we are going. And
for us to go here, we need this.
The elders are saying, no, we were also young, you follow that way, we are going to, we are also going to be like us one day.
Be patient.
Be patient, we are going to be like us. But yeah, I think it's a conversation that really need to be expanded, especially if you just ask yourself, how old you are, where are you going to be in 2063. It's a very good thing to have a plan. That's why I'm always telling people to say, even our 2030 agenda, which is most likely not going to be achieved based on what we put on the table looking at the timeline, but it's a good benchmarking to say, at least when we reach here, we are going to be somewhere, because you must always have something that you are looking up to.
Yeah, and you should have something to measure.
David,
I saw that the phone line was flashing. So to the caller that tried to call now, don't worry, we'll answer now. I was just waiting for David to make his point.
No, you can take him or her.
Yeah, but it still needs to flash.
You can engage us at 083-288-401, 083-288-401, so that you can contribute to the conversation.
A key thing that you pointed out also was, that's some of the reasons why I like starting from Namibia, and then I benchmark what the AU wants to achieve against what Namibia is doing.
And no, you have good insight, because you're up to date with continental report.
The funny thing is, David, that we've seen there.
Yeah.
Namibia goes and does, let's say, a census.
Yeah.
Then you hope the AU probably would have done a census of it depends on like all the censuses being done across the continent. And then we can complete that sort of like that picture of why the reform needs to take place. Because this document that I showed you now on the tablet right there, that document of the Agenda 2063, it speaks about where we want to be. But it doesn't. But it's a document written by the heads of state of African countries. It doesn't influence from a direction of saying, what does each country or each region represent? Maybe in other documents that flowed from that document, it would say that. But it doesn't say a discussion of, okay, let's swap the actual transformation, which is on page 21. Up to the front. Let's just flip the editing around. Put page 21 at the top. You start with an introduction that explains why this segment is here first, the transformation, which includes the supposed self-sustainability type dimension. And then you cascade from there. Because self-sustainability, you and I would know, Helmut and I, we also dissected it a little bit earlier in the show. Self-sustainability allows you to manage your resource, which is financing, with what you're going to execute.
Yeah.
Because if the Namibian government tells us that every year, at the start and at the end of the year, this is our budget, guys.
Yeah.
When we start here in February, this is what we say we want to spend.
Mm.
In October, we are assessing what we have spent.
Yeah.
But we don't hear that from the AU.
No, you don't hear it. But when you mention a very good thing, especially when you say it was done at the state level.
Yeah.
I think when it's being incorporated into policies, it should not just be we are subscribing. It should be taught.
Yeah.
And it should be understood by the policymakers, policy analysts, junior researchers to say when we are drafting this policy, when we are saying it is in line with UN Agenda 2030, it's in line with Agenda 2063 of Africa we want, then it's in line with our national developmental plan.
Yeah.
This is exactly what we mean. But what is also interesting is that at a strategic level, that is what the document is saying.
Yeah.
But things are changing.
Yes.
Going to 2063, we have a lot of things that are changing on the way.
Mm.
When that document was drafted, there was no intensification of AI.
Mm.
Cybersecurity was not as it is now. Now you have to ask yourself a question to say now, we are focusing on the document, but we are also dealing with situations that are emerging.
Mm.
There was no COVID-19. When Agenda 2016 was drafted.
Which was 2015.
Yeah. There was no COVID-19. And mind you, even the war that we have now in the Middle East, there was nothing like that. But
there was no Ukraine conflict also?
There was no Ukraine conflict.
Yeah.
But we cannot only say, like any other person who say no, because of what is happening around the world. There are also things that happen now that can be advantageous.
Mm.
And can also accelerate reaching of Agenda 2063, apart from looking at those things. People were not enlightened as they are enlightened now.
Mm.
But looking at where we are going, the question is that, are we doing it at a country level? Yeah. Namibia was given its certificate last year. And when... I'm
not saying that. When you're saying that, it sounds like a kindergarten.
No, we're given our certificate because they really asked to say, to what level is Namibia implementing Agenda 2063?
Mm.
But there are also positive things to say, no, people have an understanding, but institutions are fragmented.
Mm.
I just wonder if you go to the Minister of Health, just to give an example.
Yeah.
To say the Minister of Health is it's a very interesting ministry. They have a lot of programs. Mm. There are also challenges within their program in which they are dealing with still now. Mm. Being investigated and all these things. But if I just go there today and ask a question to say, are we in line with Agenda 2063 in our policy and planning, I may end up getting a different
response. Yeah.
A different response, because if we are in line, Agenda 2063 is talking about self-sustaining.
Yeah.
Have we ever dreamed in our life one day that Namibia is producing its own medicine? Have you ever put that in our dream?
But we can do it.
Yeah, we can do it. But that is where Agenda 2063 is saying.
Yeah.
Have you ever dreamed that Namibia can imitate Cuba, China, to integrate traditional medication to modern modern medicine?
To advance traditional
medications.
Yeah.
Because if we don't put that in our mind, then Agenda 2063 is implemented partially.
Mm.
Yes, it's good to come up with AI doctors, AI ambulance and all these things.
And it's good to have roads.
Yeah, and it's good to have roads.
Yeah.
But do you understand where the forefathers of AU said? And you can go to all the institutions. Then you get a picture.
Mm.
Let's wait end of this month. A lot of reports are going to come out. APRM. I can't wait to read them.
Yeah.
And they are very honest, a lot of reports.
But is it from the AU level?
Yeah, at AU level, coordinating with the National Secretariat.
Because the one, what I'm more focused on is the, what's that thing's name that's happening in Mongolia later this month? Yeah. The desertification COP.
The COP is also the other thing.
Yeah. Because I asked yesterday when you remember part of the audios that I sent you from the event of yesterday.
Yeah.
I asked just before the event started, I asked some of the Ministry of Environment officials, are we sending someone there? Because Namibia was the Namibia is the only country with two deserts in its border.
And they have the oldest desert in the world.
Yeah. So it's the smallest, that desert, because it's smaller than the Kalahari.
Yeah.
But we face unique challenges as a country, which impacts, for example, like what the transformation of this, of the AU itself needs to achieve, because part of AU's goal should also be, how do you look after the natural environment?
Yeah.
I know, for example, the bigger concern is the agribusiness, the sustainability of agriculture on the continent, and the agenda also notes that we need to advance agribusiness, agri-industrialization, which is good. But then we get to another thing, David. We just don't know how to live in peace.
No, I think one
thing... Okay, we as Namibia, we in SADC, we know. We know how to live in peace with each other.
Except Mozambique.
And
Madagascar.
Partially Madagascar.
Yeah.
And must now South Africa must now.
Yeah.
Where...
No, science are always there. You know, when it's happening in South Africa, you will not really look at it as problematic. But if you are looking at South Africa, this xenophobic attack, when you are in Tunisia and you are looking at South Africa, you might have a different picture.
Because when you're in Morocco and you're
you might have a different picture.
Or you're
picture.
In Libya with looking at South Africa.
Yeah, you might have a different picture. Mm. But you are correct. The question is also that we need to ask is that is the international space that you're operating in.
Mm.
And I know our national leaders, they understand that you need to be very careful. You look at them and you look at the way they are too careful when they are at the international forum. Because we are playing with the big boys. We understand that. But we must also know that there is a difference between being careful and also
being calculatable.
Being calculating and saving the people. Because it's undeniable Africa is a battleground of resources. And that will not come with peace.
We're
on the battleground. Yeah,
we the Africans. Yeah. We're sort of like the obstacle.
For
the world, because the world knows they've got to work with us.
Yeah.
Or deal with us. Or unfortunately, they influence the differences between us.
Yeah, we are the battleground between the Western world and the Eastern world, and the competition is about the resources and the growing of. It's not the AI economy, but it's advanced economies.
Yeah.
People are now, they want the fastest invisible jets in the world to fight a more advanced war. People want equipment that can fly within a very short period of time to go to Mars. Where are you finding these materials? They are found in Africa. The battle of lithium becomes so intensified now, currently as we are speaking. If you look at our good friend China, and the USA. USA is saying, no, China is doing this and this. The good thing about China is very, it's a quiet operator. China, they don't talk a lot.
They don't even defend themselves.
Yeah. They don't defend themselves. They just,
all they will just say is no, that is misinformation.
they don't defend themselves. They just do what they do and they go. But one thing is also that, is this better going to leave us a desert or going to leave us with something?
Yeah.
Because it's not going to end now. As long as you have AI, as long as you have competition of data centers, as long as you have competition of rare earth minerals. Because if we really have people that are protecting those resources, believe me, Africa is going to be paradise. We already have the economic power. In terms of natural resources, we already have the young people around the world. But as Helmut said, people can't wait to go through the river, through the Mediterranean Sea, to go to other. Why are you running away from gold?
I don't know.
Why are we running away from treasure?
Okay, you weren't here at the start when I explained to Helmut what came out of what happened there in Morocco, the Ceuta incident. of last week. It was because the Moroccan authorities, the border guard, they told their local people, please come and collect here at this point. And when the people showed up, that 80,000 people, and they said, okay, you can go through. The Moroccan authorities said, tell the people, you can go through. This comes out after the Spanish were asking all those people that were swimming around and and jumping through the across the wall.
Yeah.
They asked them all when they came onto the Spanish side, they asked them, who told you guys to come here? And why did you guys show? And all the people said, all the migrants said, no, the Moroccan authorities, border authorities told us to collect here at this point. It's a result specifically because of the Spanish Prime Minister that visited Algeria, which is a neighbor of Morocco, the previous month in June. That's why the Moroccans did this.
No, I see there are fights.
Now, do you see the level of pettiness that nations leaders are having on Africa with regards to how we diplomatically solve potential disputes? They incite certain particular actions.
Yeah.
And now we are in SADC. We don't understand these things because we don't know how do you just send a whole bunch of people just across someone else's border.
But you know one thing that that is also problematic in Africa.
Yeah.
We love conference. I'm not saying this for the first time. No. We love conference. Yeah. We love how do you call this?
Seminars.
Not public discussion. When
stakeholder engagement.
No. How do you call it? Yeah. Stakeholders engagement, but panel discussion. Yeah. We love those things,
yeah.
And we have been loving them. I think we were maybe very tired of fighting colonialism. After that, when you gave a black person a suit. No. Let me tell you.
But I know what you were thinking.
Yeah. When we defeated colonialism, and thank you for our forefathers. They did very well.
Yeah.
After giving us a suit, we rather go to the groundbreaking of a project or sit at a conference discussing about African problems. Mm. Or
participating in panel discussion.
And believe me, you, I've seen it with youth, especially youth in politics.
Mm.
I think they are also starting to be the same.
Mm.
There was one young people whose name is not going to be mentioned.
don't.
No, who was giving a report of the end of the tenure.
Just hold the report, David. We're coming back after a short break.
Okay.
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a You Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250 mm jars of Vaseline for only $25. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99. Get 2 kilograms of Surf's hand washing powder for just $49.99. Get 750 mm Sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99. You Save. Where else?
And we come back to your listeners after that short break. David, you were still on a report.
Yeah, that young person whose name is not going to be mentioned gave a very nice presentation of what he has done at the end of that tenure.
Yeah.
Then people were asking, what did you do? No, we represented the young people. We attended these conferences. We attended this engagement. We also met with this one. Then I asked myself a question to say, out of all those reporting, there is only one project, which indeed was successful. But that is exactly what we need. But not to be racist.
Mm.
Compared to our white counterpart,
mm.
I was at Mining Expo today.
Mm.
But what shocked me are the Namibian businesses that they do not even make noise. We don't even see them.
Mm.
And I asked them, "No, guys, why are you not coming to Eagle FM so that we can market with us?"
Mm.
These are the people that they are wearing exactly like you.
Yeah.
They are not in suits,
yeah.
But they mean business.
Yeah.
And today I got a very bigger picture on how the mining sector is operating. But one thing that we need to look at is that we are not going to build in a suit.
No.
We are not going to build in a discussion. As long as we are energetic and we are not doing anything, we will never build in a suit.
Mm.
And we will never build based on benchmarking after benchmarking.
Mm.
But we also need people to come and
conferences.
We also need people to come and benchmark on us.
Yeah.
But to sum up, African Agenda 2063 is a document that that I respect so much. Nobody can match that drafting. Mm. I think it was made with a good intention. The question is that all those policies, are they well explained?
Mm.
Is somebody who is in grade 12 understand what the African Agenda 2063 is? Because they are, and I've seen it, even when you read policies in Zimbabwe and South Africa,
mm.
they always have the same thing. We start with UN, we come to Africa, then you come to the national development priority. But we cannot outrule it now. 2063 is still far.
Mm.
But I think history is going to judge us, because when we are grandfathers also, people also look at us to say, no, Dwight, what did you do? David, what did we do? But I think,
well, I'll be brutally honest,
yeah.
David, when I get to that level, because I don't have a problem in sharing.
Yeah,
One of the biggest things that have annoyed me, specifically like in Namibian context,
yeah.
now,
mm-hmm.
David, have you realized if you speak to fellow people, which can be your family, your friends,
yeah.
just bros, broad acquaintances, like actually, you are slightly more spoiled than me in terms of observing me, how I communicate here with our colleagues.
Okay.
You've realized that my communication style is,
open.
I am blunt.
Yeah.
I am to the point.
Yeah.
And I give you the facts.
Yeah.
I rarely lie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you don't know me, you would say I'm lying right now. But you can ask David.
Yeah, yeah.
If David asks me a direct question,
yeah.
I give him the answer. Mm. The concern has been, David, that we're also not honest in Namibia in collecting, disseminating, and interpreting information for each other.
Just say we are selfish about the information. Mm,
no, it's like a mixture or combination there. Of various negative characteristics in Namibia.
Yeah. yeah.
For example, what's the best thing that I can show out? For example, the misunderstanding, for example, around the role of political parties.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry, political parties and politicians out there. I'm sorry for using you guys constantly. You guys are a soft target, but I will use you nonetheless.
yeah.
For example, back in 2024, yeah. with regards to the threat of deregistration, remember, of those political parties before the presidential election.
Yeah.
But there was one core thing that came out of the reasoning of the authority, which was the ECN, regarding why they were going to this extent.
Mm.
Now, if the authority, which is empowered by a law, says, Dwight, I'm going to take your license away because you're not adhering or complying to the law.
Yeah.
Why would, technically in that context, when the political parties were throwing out their toys, why would you go and say something else to start a whole propaganda campaign about how this authority is just targeting you? But the authority is explaining, but you didn't adhere or comply what I wanted you to do. Mm-hmm. Now, that's just one small example.
I hear you.
Across Namibia, I've met so many people, David. Look, I know us humans, we are complex people. We do complicate.
We are very difficult to read.
We overcomplicate things in some cases.
Yeah.
Specifically Namibians. We overcomplicate something. We don't try to simplify our lives for each other to improve, even quality of life or living standards and stuff. And when it comes to actual information, there was a former lecturer that showed up at that UN Conference of Trade and Development report, economic diversification report at the start of the year.
Yeah.
Which was hosted by Ministry of International Relations.
Yeah.
But a guy stood up there and said, I am just going to say this as a former, I'm paraphrasing his words. I'm going to say this as a former lecturer and as an academic.
Mm.
The biggest thing we Namibians face is that firstly, we undermine each other.
Mm.
This is very obvious. I see this every day.
No, we don't assist each other. We rather criticize.
We compete with each other.
Yeah.
And Namibia has, in terms of like human capital now,
yeah.
we've got very limited human capital in skilled areas, in academic areas, and in the areas that really mean something to actually... That thing that you explained a little bit earlier, even your example now, which is the same example, the who operates in our mining sector.
Yeah.
And then I explained to you, for example, that if you have one skill set in Namibia, you can identify literally 20 people.
Yeah.
But that company, that foreign company, can only hire two of those Namibians. Because the other 18 Namibians are literally in the other mining companies in the sector.
Yeah.
So they know Namibia's limitations.
You know, the mining expo in Namibia will give you a very good picture.
Oh, no.
Who own...
It's very brutal.
Who own the Namibian economy?
Yeah, it's a very brutal.
And if you can read between the line, you can also ask a question to say when a call is being given to say, young people, come and join the mining sector. At what level? Yes, you can join at an employee level. You can join at an intern level. Maybe it's a good start. But to transform that sector, you need more money, my friend.
Yeah.
You need more money. Just go to the showground. Look at the mining expo. Use your own analysis. Then you can also get something that I also told you to say. Somewhere, somehow, our academia did not take us the right direction. Because for you to have one mining operating fully, I start realizing that you have a lot of hundreds of agencies. You have a lot of companies that are involved. Consultants.
The value additions.
Yeah, consultants. And somebody just specializes in drilling. Somebody just specialize in, how do you call this thing? Demolishing.
Demolition.
They are technically the bomb squad of the mining industry, yeah. Destroying and all these things. And I have seen one very beautiful business of a guy just selling tires, these bigger tires, to say, for bigger tractors in the mining industry. Say one, the cheapest one is 70K. Just a tire. There's no rim, nothing. Just a tire.
Just a tire. Yeah. What's the size of the tire, David?
No, I think it's bigger than me when I'm standing.
You know, yeah. For you guys, okay, David, sorry, man. I've been making you famous the whole time. So for you guys who know, who've seen the height of David, imagine that tire taller than David.
Yeah, yeah.
And David is taller than me. Just letting you know.
Yeah, but I think what we are saying now, not to overrule the progress that has been made, but also to say when you listen to programs such as Home Run, and you guys have done a good progress in terms of information dissemination. Once you have information, then you are armed. It doesn't mean that you become ungovernable, start pointing figures. Yeah, because the information can do a lot of
things. Chaotic.
You know, information can do a lot of things to a person.
Yeah.
Somebody get information and start toying. Another person gets information and strategically use them.
Yeah.
Another person gets information and change the perspective. Then we don't want you to be ungovernable.
The cool thing then I've realized, David, after now being here with Eagle FM for 6 years and you know, the information that I've been exposed to.
Yeah.
The thing is that I realized, David, is that I go and sit and think, how does the media industry in Namibia position itself?
Yeah.
David, I'm telling you, I can write a book now about how we journalists leave out sets of information.
Yeah.
People might then say, like analysts would say, this is self-censorship.
Yeah.
But then you also realize you can't go and transcribe word for word what a presenter at a conference is presenting.
Yeah.
And the unfortunate thing is I have to do it like every day, like the wonderful article about the Kavango River. To know, David, that this plan of Kavango Link, for example, comes from 1974, which shows you the South Africans were thinking of ideas
ahead of their time.
And us Namibians, we keep regurgitating old ideas that already highlighted feasibility issues. Meaning, this thing is unsustainable. Meaning, this thing won't survive. Meaning,
I know.
We might be spending money and then we have to develop something else. Templates like that show that the knowledge is already there.
Yeah.
We just had to build from the knowledge.
In some cases, it's not even building. It's just to act. You know, I don't know. You just need to act. Recommendations are there.
Yeah.
Engineers are done. Economists, they predicted. The problem that we have in the diamond sector, people have already predicted these things. People have already advised. The current situation that we have now, I was shocked, and I don't know how I missed this document. I'm always tracking, economic progress in other countries, but I was shocked I did not even look at Namibia. The IV report on Namibia 2026 by IMF. all the recommendations are there. All your economic predictions are there. And at some point, I also asked myself, but these guys, are they really honest about the context of Namibia? All the recommendations are there to say, they even mention NDP 6. IMF is up to date with what we do, what we do here. And they mention it to say, for you to achieve it, this is what you need to do.
Mm.
Come 2027, if we don't do what a lot of experts have advised, whether we can argue with IMF to some extent, say no, it's just a Britain-owned institution and all these things.
Mm.
But African Union also say Namibia do this. Come back next year, then we are still saying let us go, guys, and meet at Avani Hotel. Let's meet in Hilton
or Country Club.
Then we discuss this problem.
or a drone boss here outside.
Yeah, and we really discuss how to handle this economy.
Yeah,
and it's going to be really unfortunate, especially to things that need immediate attention.
And then as the media, we only show up to broadcast a minister's speech or the prime minister's speech.
Yeah, and you cannot really give everything if information that you are getting from Eagle FM, for example, you are not utilizing them. If information that you are getting, because it's a good platform that we don't really go into personal things.
Mm.
To say information of bread and butter, if you are getting them and you are not utilizing them, it's quite not productive for the future.
Mm.
And it's going to be undermining Agenda 2063.
Mm. Which is going to undermine Agenda 2030 or Vision 2030 for us.
Yeah.
There's
also a new the ongoing already progress of drafting beyond 2030. We are ahead. But yeah.
So technically we know that Vision 2030 has failed. With that sentence that you just gave us,
it's not like that. I think we are very interested in drafting and having something ahead of us.
Okay, so to be ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, to be ahead of ourselves. Okay. Because Vision 2020, beyond 2030, was supposed to be drafted based on the review of NDP 6.
Okay, so
implementation, because you cannot draft a strategic plan without a review.
Yeah.
Of the previous one, how did you fail?
Yeah.
Or where did you move?
Yeah.
Because, that is it for now.
Yeah, that's basically it. Mm. Well, on that note,
the dear small things. Contact Eagle FM.
On that note, dear listeners, pardon the slight interruption. This brings us to the end of this evening session of The Home Run. David, thanks once again. Let's see each other same time, same place tomorrow.
Shop, bye bye.
And enjoy the rest of your evening in our company, guys.